It's time for TWiT. Robert Scoble joins Clayton Morris and Tim Stevens. Who won the Earthquake News Olympics? I say Twitter. Robert Scoble says Facebook. Find out why he thinks Facebook is the best and why I disagree. We'll also talk about Google's autonomous vehicles. Apparently, they're allowed to go 10 miles over the speed limit and a whole lot more. This Week in Tech, coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 472, recorded August 24th, 2014, like a fine cheese. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by Citrix GoToMeeting, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even present from an iPad. Start your 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. And by NatureBox. Order great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine. Get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like honey Dijon pretzels. Mm-mm. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/TWIT. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIT to receive $10 off at checkout. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news, such as it is this week. You know, pretty much the dog days of August. There's nothing to talk about, but good news. We've got some of the best technology analysts in the business here to not talk about it. I'll start all the way over here to the right. Mr. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer, is here. He came stolen to my office on Friday, and we couldn't get rid of him. So,
I had to wear your Mickey Mouse ears and sit on the ball, you know?
Did you only post that picture on Facebook? Did you put that anywhere else?
Yeah, just on Facebook, and Tanya took one as well, so...
So that's intriguing. Are you a Facebook only kind of guy now?
I'm spending more and more time on Facebook, particularly for the funny little personal stuff.
God,
like that.
I hate Facebook with a passion that burns like the flames of hell. But we'll talk about that. Here's a picture of Robert invading my space.
Sitting on the ball, taking control, man. Isn't that every geek's dream to be Leo LaPorte and run his empire?
you can bet it's my dream. Did we disinfect the ball? Yeah. Also with us, Mr. Tim Stevens of CNET, their automotive editor. You should be here. We got the big races going on at the raceway over here.
Yeah, I know. I would love to be there. But we'll be coming out, I think, soon. Maybe, I don't know, early September, something like that.
Good.
I should probably be out there again.
Good. Maybe. Well, come up and visit us when you do.
I would love to.
We're just down the road from Infineon, not far at all. Looks like are you in Upper New York State? Where are you?
Yes, I'm at home up around Albany, New York.
Sorry. Albany, New York. Also in New York State, from beautiful Lake Tinky Winky, Mr. Clayton Morris. that's a beautiful shot.
Oh, thank you.
You look great.
Yeah, Tim, did you, I didn't see you at the community center this afternoon. I'll see you there later for shuffleboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what time the co-op opened today, so I wanted to get there
Bingo.
Early, but a little later.
Right, but tonight is potluck, so you'll need to bring, are you going to bring some of your fabulous biscuits and
absolutely, and we got some fresh honey today as well from the hives. So, and that is actually not a lot.
And that concludes the farm report on this edition. Twig. No, I'm glad you guys are on vacation. This is the time to be on vacation. It's a slow time in tech, and we're about to head into a very busy time because September 4th, Motorola is going to make its announcements. September 9th, of course, the Apple announcements. So now is the slow period. We all just kind of...
Let's be honest. You had to find three people who were not at Burning Man.
Oh, wow. I don't know. You know, they did. Burning Man is, I guess, now gentrified, some have said, by all the tech executives who fly in via helicopter or drive in customized buses and airstreams.
I don't know. I've never been to Burning Man. I haven't been. Well, no, I shouldn't. I take that back. I haven't been to Burning Man since it happened on Ocean Beach in San Francisco, which is many, many years ago.
Yeah.
It's now in the desert. So none of you, any hankering to go? Tim, have you ever been to Burning Man?
No, I've never been. I've talked with the Miriam Joire quite a few times about her experiences there, and it always sounds like a hell of a show, but I don't know if it's exactly my cup of tea. It'd be good to visit, I think, for a day, but I don't know if I'd want to do like a whole week up there.
They're going up. Actually, a lot of people, a lot of the day visitors go later. It's a Labor Day weekend. The people who are going now are building stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's some amazing buildings that they put up out there. And I love watching the videos of all the sculptures and everything like that. But, yeah, that's a long time to be in the desert for me.
There's also many, many parties that are world-class. A lot of creative people go there to experiment with performance.
The orgy tent.
Yeah, well, there's that, too.
Yeah, I was going to go to the orgy tent. Yeah, I was going to go to the orgy tent this year.
I think all the Twitterers should go to the orgy tent. We could have
Come on, that's the reason people go to Burning Man. I know why. I know why they go there to use drugs and have sexual relations.
Some people don't use drugs that go there. So
actually, that's the last thing you'd want to do. It's full of alkaloid sand.
Yeah.
Chafing. Good.
I misread the invitation, though. It said orgy tent. I thought it said hoagie tent.
Now that I go to.
And I love a good hoagie. Last year, our mutual friend Trey Ratcliffe invited me to go.
Trey loves
photography,
it.
And that's you know, that aspect of it would have been appealing to me. I don't know that I could justify telling Fox, though.
No. I think you'd lose your credentials if you went. Although, if you go, you should wear a nice suit, the British collar that you wear, the tie, real red tie, blue suit, white shirt. You'd fit right in.
And no pants.
And no pants. You know what? That might work.
That would work out there.
That might work.
And to ride around on a giant Ferris wheel or a unicycle.
So the results are in, and Twitter won the internet this week. The earthquake that hit the San Francisco Bay Area at 3:21 this morning woke up apparently every startup entrepreneur in the every Twitter user. And I tell you, the first thing I did after I jumped out of bed shouting earthquake and ran around in circles is I pulled out the smartphone and looked at Twitter. There was nothing on Google Plus. There was nothing on, well, Facebook, there was a lot of people doing the ALS ice bucket challenge 3 days ago. And then Twitter was all about the earthquake. I got the magnitude, the epicenter instantly.
What you didn't see, because I Facebook first and then tweeted, and several people said I was the first one to tweet. I was still writing when the house was shaking. So on both.
Oh, bully for you.
Because that's what we do. We don't care about saving our lives. We care about getting the first tweet out.
Jeez.
So while the futon was shaking, you were tweeting.
Exactly.
Dude, what was your first tweet?
I said big earthquake.
Big earthquake.
Big earthquake was my first one on Facebook, and then big earthquake woke me up was my tweet. And
curiosity,
within a minute, because I put both screens up, within a minute, my entire Facebook feed was the earthquake, and my entire Twitter feed was the earthquake. So it depends on who you've followed, who you've liked, who you've taught the engine that you want to see, and even what you've put into the engine. So I bet. It saw that I'm interested in earthquake because I posted something about earthquake, and it brought me a whole bunch of stuff immediately. It was pretty interesting.
Facebook's algorithm baffles me. I cannot figure out. I've complained about it before. You said, I should come over and show you how to get Facebook working. I have yet to. In fact, I was trying to find the picture of you in my studio on Facebook. I saw it immediately, and then it disappeared, and I never found it again. I actually have to go to your page to find it now.
Yep.
I can't figure out how it works at all.
It doesn't work. You're supposed to read it and then click like, and then it'll show you something else.
And as Matt Honan showed, if you like everything, it's going to go haywire.
Or if you like nothing, right?
Maybe that's it. So you think I don't like enough if I liked more stuff?
What things you've liked, who your friends are, who you put on close friends list, and who you put on acquaintance list. Because if you put somebody in the close friends list, you'll see more items from them. So you're actually on my close friends list because I want to see every time you talk about Twitter or something, right?
Close friends list.
Yeah.
Okay.
That doesn't
mean we're about to watch on Facebook lately. It has been getting better. The more I hide, I find the more focused my news feed gets.
It takes you really kind of cultivating it to get it to be any good.
Yeah.
But they do not expose how you do it. I mean, they don't say, oh, this is what you should do.
No. Mm-hmm. Because it's trying to study your emotional attachment to things, to content, to places, to people. And so I'm giving it more signal than most human beings. When you haven't given enough signal, it doesn't really work that way.
So here's my question. I see this post from Julio Ojeda Zapata, great journalist at the Minneapolis or Minnesota Twin Press. And it's of salsa dancing. Now, if I like this, what is the signal? Am I sending a signal that I like salsa dancing? Am I sending a signal I like Julio?
You like Julio. You like salsa dancing. You like videos. Every one of them is a little tiny vote for more of that.
How do I vote for less of this?
Click hide. So they're over on the right side, there's a little
drop-down. But this is my problem. Am I hiding Julio?
No, you're hiding that specific post, and you.
But
are
what's the signal? Is it going to give me less Julio?
You're going to see maybe less salsa dancing, so it might. It you don't know how it works, but
you
it does work.
Admit this. You are guessing.
I know that it's a signal on the
you
person
have no
on the content
clue.
They are what? Watching the content.
I know they're watching, but do you have any clue what any of this is doing?
Don't look behind the curtain, gentlemen.
Quite a bit. Here's an example. If I post a family photo, the first people to like it are almost always my family members. And if I post something like I'm on Twit, like I just did, it goes to a more general audience and it goes further. So it's keeping track of the kind of content that you click like on and hide, and it's trying to bring you more.
I disagree. I don't see how Facebook could possibly distinguish between a post about family members or a post family members would be interested in. How does it know your family's not named Twit?
Because they're all on my list. I put them all on my family list.
What if you call a family member a Twit?
Here.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay. But here,
Robert, I don't want to see your feed. I don't.
No, there's a family list over here.
Yeah.
You click family, and there's 32 people on that. So Facebook knows that these people.
Okay, now
I see. I never see her stuff because she's on my family list, and I've taught my main feed not to show me her stuff or my brother's.
Wait a minute.
Tavern, right?
Wait a minute.
I don't see. Look, there's a cat photo. I never see cat photos on my main.
You're drunk, Robert. This makes no sense. You're saying I don't see her because she's on my family list, but I see more family. I don't understand.
Because
it's
building a contextual system that is studying how to get news to you, route news to you. And it's trying to pick the best 30 things to show you right now, right?
Actually, I take it back. You're not drunk.
What?
Facebook is drunk.
Now, here, I don't want to see this kind of post, so I hide that, right? Now I see a Giga Ohm post. I see Eric, who runs Pebble Watch. I see Francisco, who does conferences for executives. I see Steve Jurvetson, who's not only a neighbor.
Is this all stuff you want to see?
Yes, this is all pretty high quality.
How do you know that other stuff you want to see is not on there?
Because I can use a list to see all of it. And when I click on my acquaintance list, for instance, I see all my acquaintances.
You know, you're the only person in the world who's done this much work.
Robert. I mean, don't you think that much curation, no way in the world the average user of Facebook is doing this much curation like
That's
you do.
True.
I mean, you do
That's
this on
true.
Google Plus,
but
you're,
my
you
signal,
do this on Twitter.
My signals are helping the engine learn because the way Gmail's filters work, the way the machine learning on Facebook works, if I teach it how to create a good feed, and there's a whole team working on this at Facebook, they're trying to pick the right thing for the right person at the right time. If I help that engine by liking things, it brings more things into your view.
It
as
feels
well.
To me like a pinball game. You like something, then something else comes and you get too much of that, and it doesn't ever seem to really suit. As
it
far
does
as I'm
get
concerned.
Better, and it's my friends and I, when we compare and I pull out the feed, it is running away with the game.
Not even close.
I guarantee you in a year, you are going to come back to me and say I was wrong, that Facebook is running away with the game, particularly if he ships a search engine and if he ships an at-work thing. It is running away with the game. Here's another way it's running away with the game. I post a video done on my iPhone on the Facebook app, and it's up in 2 minutes because it's compressing on the GPU of the iPhone, and then it's uploading while I'm typing the description. So by the time I hit publish, it nearly goes live instantly. Google Plus, I just did the same thing 3 days ago. It took 10 hours for a video from my iPhone to get online live. This is Facebook is running away with the game in a whole lot of levels. And if Twitter and Google Plus don't fix what's going on, they're going to notice that other people are going away from it. And I'm noticing
what game are we talking
about?
Are those videos searchable, for instance, if...
Not yet.
That's the issue, right? So someone takes a video of themselves in their backyard doing an ice bucket challenge.
The first place I went after the earthquake was Twitter. I didn't even consider Facebook.
Facebook in 1 minute brought me 20 posts. I posted a whole bunch of them right instantly off my iPhone that I
Tim. Tim, what was the first place? Well, you weren't in the Bay Area. Neither of you are in the Bay Area, so
no, sir.
That you probably didn't jump up and say at 3:21 for no reason at all, let me check Twitter.
It didn't even occur to me to go to Facebook.
I'll give you a more germane example. When you heard Robin Williams died, did you go to Twitter?
I did.
I flipped it on. Well, I flipped it on television because I want, you know.
Oh, you're a TV guy.
I'll tell you, my wife yelled. She saw it on Facebook. I went to Twitter and Facebook instantly, and I was still very early in the story. Most people were, when I said Robin Williams just died, the XYZ, I forget whether it was ABC or somebody is reporting, people were saying, dude, is that a hoax?
Right.
Because they didn't believe that it was so early in the news cycle.
I don't think you're typical, though, Robert. I think most people don't think of Facebook as a good source for breaking news.
Absolutely true. I'm ahead. And that's why I know in a year you're going to come back to me and say, you were right. This thing is running away with the game.
By game, Farmville?
My feed is just filled with Huffington Post articles.
Farmville, that's the game it's winning. Yeah, absolutely.
Social? No, I don't see any games on my feed. I taught it.
I don't see any more games on my feed either. I have to say.
So Facebook,
but Huffington Post, like viral junk, weird news articles are the ones, and maybe it's because I click like
the Upworthy. You like Upworthy?
I just refresh. I like those. I don't see any Upworthy.
No, I've taken Upworthy out. I liked one Robert Scoble post. Now I can't help but see Robert Scoble every time I go to Facebook.
Yep, because it's studying your signal.
But look at this. I just loaded this. This is my Facebook feed. Here's a video that was posted 4 hours ago. I don't know when you liked Wix. I guess this is an ad, so I'm not going to care about that.
That's an ad.
Russell posted this tweet about Twitter about the earthquake 11 hours ago, 9 hours ago. 2 hours. This is not current. Is it me? No, you're blaming me for this?
Yes.
11 hours ago. Hey, Petaluma friends, did you feel that quake? That's in my current feed just now.
Yes, it's your fault because you haven't been on Facebook.
it's showing you
interesting stuff from the past hours that you haven't been on Facebook. I've been on Facebook all day, so it's
no, that's wrong. That's wrong, Robert. I've been using Facebook a lot because I've been looking.
Here's something 23 minutes ago on my feed. Here's Business Week 24 minutes ago.
I admit you're winning at Facebook, but I now, just. Okay, get this. I just refreshed. Wait a minute, Robert. I just refreshed my feed. What did I get? A YouTube post from August 22nd. 2 days ago.
Yep. Let me ask you this, Robert, since I don't know that there's anybody better at this stuff than you, but
it thinks Paul Thurrott's still in Barcelona. According to Facebook, Paul Thurrott, who's been home for a week, is still in Barcelona. This is useless.
Let me ask you this, Robert. I know that pictures.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Clayton.
Robert, let me ask you this. I mean, I know that pictures get such a huge reaction, right? So in my Facebook feed, I just posted, you know, we were heading on vacation. I was playing around with one of these giant ass Windows phones. And I was just shooting some photos while my wife was driving. And so that post that I put up there, little on the road for a little family vacation, it's public. You know, that photo post got, 245 likes in just like a matter of minutes. I had linked to via Twitter this earthquakes course on iTunes University. That was like an excellent iTunes U course from Cal Academy.
and said, "Hey, you know, here's something great. I was fooling around on my iPad when Daddy asks, you know, when your child asks, what's an earthquake?" And I linked to that. Almost no likes, because I pushed it from Twitter. So literally one like compared to nearly 300 likes for a photo. And that seems, anytime I post a news piece on Facebook, very rarely do I get any kind of interest on it. It's usually just casual junk that gets the most response.
You have not picked your friends very well.
See, it's always our fault, isn't it?
Your friends are choosing to like
Facebook
your photos.
Facebook sucks, Robert. No, you're wrong.
Here's how the filter works. Let's get some.
Not that Twitter is a whole lot better, but at least when there's an earthquake, I know I can go to Twitter and I will immediately see, you know, confirmation and information about the earthquake.
Here's how Facebook
like today on the air. Today on the air, Robert. Let me just say this. This was Facebook.
Go ahead, Tim. Let me give you a chance since you haven't been able to get a word in edgewise.
I was just going to say that I think Robert needs to start up a school for how to use Facebook, and then we can send all of our friends to this school. I'm guessing tuition will be affordable, and maybe there'll be financial aid packages available. But if we can send all of our friends, then maybe Facebook will be a better experience.
That's the point, is how can you say something is good if it requires this much energy? Even Mark Zuckerberg himself said no one makes lists.
Because it's like driving a Ferrari. If you don't put the work into knowing how to drive a Ferrari, you're going to probably wreck the car and kill yourself like the CEO of Eagle Computer did it on his first day of going public. He bought a Ferrari and killed himself the first day.
Yeah.
Well, let me say this about local advertising, though. You're absolutely right. And I see a lot of small businesses that I work with and help them with their Facebook advertising and talk with them about this. And I've done some myself, and it's been tremendous. I mean, the amount of granularity that you can get in a community. So let's say, and I use this example, if you're a local pet store owner, or you have a small little pet store in some small town in New Jersey, what better way to get people foot traffic into your store, you know, in addition just to the general traffic that's walking by, but then by taking out a Facebook ad locally that targets specifically, with all of the information you can do now with the power editor inside of Facebook advertising, to target those people who A, have a pet in that town, might be over 33 years old, so they may have some more disposable income than the 18-year-old. Maybe they own their own home. You can target all of those people specifically within a specific zip code, and you can offer them a coupon of 20% off or even a free toy to come in and say hello for the first week while we're opening at the grand opening store. Nowhere else, I think, can you get that kind of granularity from advertising. But it pays, Robert, to your point, to learn how to use that system. Yeah. Instead of just putting up one of those generic posts to try to drive traffic to a post, but actually how to use the power editor within Facebook can be tremendous for local businesses.
Yeah, but we're talking about Facebook as end users, not as advertisers. I mean,
here's the problem for end users, for normal people, not me. They're going to open up Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus on their phone, probably an Android phone, and they're going to compare the three. And the three, probably of the three, Facebook will have some more interesting things to them. Their friends are on it, first of all. Their work coworkers are on it. The brands that they care about are on it. And they've friended enough. They've done enough to get something interesting on that first feed. For me, I see it as a platform that gives me news, because I have notifications coming to my phone. So if I was somewhere else and there was an earthquake, I would see it on Twitter and Facebook in real time, and I would know who's the most credible and authoritative person talking about that. Normal people don't care about that. They just want to see, do you have any baby photos on the feed? You go over to Twitter and they follow the Kardashians, and that's all they see, right?
Audio in our chat room. He said, Facebook is a data mining tool that's trying to socially engineer and then monetize our relationships. I feel socially engineered every time I use Facebook. I absolutely feel manipulated.
We're always socially engineered.
Do you all not feel manipulated every time you use Facebook? Am I wrong? Don't you feel a little manipulated when you visit Facebook?
I've gotten over that feeling. That feeling I have.
By suppressing it. Robert, you're being manipulated. You compartmentalize it.
I'm using it to make a news feed for myself, which is it is the best news feed by far. Wow. It has less noise than Twitter has, and it has certainly less noise than Google Plus. And I can prove this if you come over here.
Wait a minute, bro, Robert. What if you followed the right people on Twitter? Wouldn't you have a great news feed? I mean, it, isn't it a case that if you put that kind of effort into Twitter, you would also have...
I have put that kind of effort
into Twitter. The problem I have with Facebook is it's opaque. I don't know what Facebook's doing. With Twitter, if I follow somebody, I'll see their stuff, all of it. If I don't, I won't. And I think that you can cultivate a Twitter feed in a way that you can't cultivate a Facebook feed because it's not. It's opaque. You don't know what Facebook is doing with your signals.
Nope. And that's where you have to get into just letting the engine do something for you. Twitter, yes, will show you every post, but I'm sorry, there's a lot of news noise in this feed, right?
Robert has drunk the Kool-Aid, hasn't he?
I have totally. How many times? Study this.
The last time you were with Zuck, did he give you anything to eat or drink?
Absolutely.
Mushrooms of any kind?
Hey, Evan Williams bought me a whiskey at the Ritz one time. So
yeah, Ev isn't even involved with Twitter anymore.
Oh yeah.
I think Tim Stevens is wisely staying out of this. He says, I don't want to talk about this.
I think Clayton and I should maybe branch up and do a separate show at this point.
We'll do a Twitter show.
All right.
No, I will say, today on the air, during the earthquake, I mean, 4-hour show. I was on the air this morning at 6 a.m. Eastern time, so about 3 a.m. local time there in Petaluma. And I went right to Twitter about 3:20 after we were getting word that we had come out of a commercial break and we had a break in with breaking news that there was a 6.0 earthquake in California. So, you know, immediately I think about my in-laws that live right there, but also jumped on Twitter to see what, you know, what the news was, what, and if there were any images being shared at that hour. It's certainly dark, so getting cameras into that area was going to be a problem. But, you know, we were able to pull up images. I was able to get great, you know, local reports from people who were right in downtown Napa, who were seeing people that were trapped, buildings that had collapsed. Minutes before, you know, maybe 30 minutes before we were able to get, you know, actual cameras on the ground there. But it was great to be able to supplement that reporting live on the air from credible sources. And some of our reporters who weren't able to actually get boots on the ground in that area. One of our reporters lives right in Napa. He grew up there, and we were able to see reports and photos that he was posting to Twitter and pull those up right on the show. And using Streamboard, a great app that Robert, I think, told me about last year, to be able to watch all of the commentary. You can follow specific hashtags and see what's being said. You can then make it more granular to follow just like verified accounts or people with a certain number of followers. So it might be a news organization or something like that. But it was a great source of news on the air. And I think, I have a tendency to always go to Twitter when there's pieces of breaking news and information where you want to see the conversation. I never really see it unfolding on Facebook.
No, I don't.
But maybe
either.
It's my fault.
Or I might say Google Plus, and I love Google Plus for certain things. But I don't. I didn't. I went to Google Plus just to see if anybody was talking about the earthquake there, and there really wasn't.
You guys haven't built the structures that will bring you what you want. I have a list of news of mainstream news here. Let me show it to you,
Robert. So, I understand. You know, you don't need to belabor this.
I know,
if you put the energy in,
you can see all the stuff.
But
right?
Here's why I don't do it. It's not exactly clear what you're going to get.
It is to me now.
I think it becomes very clear
on the side. And somebody asked me what's the reason I'm doing this. I want the best of breed of the feeds. Period. Mark Canner, by the way, who started Macromedia, which became Macromind, just commented that you guys aren't getting it because you don't use it. And
I use Facebook every day, and with revulsion
not with these lists.
Nausea in my mouth.
This list. Hold on a second. I have a list that I built of 537 tech journalists in the world. You can see Danny Sullivan's there, all the usual players, right? And I can scroll through here, and I just get tech news. There's no cat photos here. There's no personal memes. It's everything happening in the tech industry right now. And it's better than what I see on Twitter for the general part. Now, breaking news and searching, absolutely, Twitter is still there. And I keep Twitter on my screen most of the time. So it's not really a Twitter versus Facebook thing, but Google Plus is falling way behind.
How many of the 1 billion Facebook users are doing this?
None.
Okay, thank you.
But I am. And first of all, if we had a show 8 years ago, there was nobody on Facebook. None of us used Facebook.
So let me ask you this.
I think that argument's a bullish argument.
Let's say I go to a news organization's Facebook page.
Yeah.
And right at the top, they've got the big cover art. If I like that page, what the hell does that do? If I follow that page, what the hell does that do?
No one knows because it's opaque. And Facebook is explicitly keeping you from knowing that.
I'll tell you, first of all, If you're a person, Robert Scoble, Leo Laporte, you have a personal profile, and you can turn on a feature called Follow. So the foundation of Facebook is a friend. That means I want to see some of your stuff, and you want to see some of my stuff. That's what a friend on Facebook means. Not a friend in real life, but a friend on Facebook. If I don't want to see your stuff, I don't friend you, and I make you follow me. Following me means you see some of my stuff and I don't see much, if any, of your stuff. If you have a brand page and you click like on it, it adds that like to your like area on your profile. So everybody can see that you like Target or like Formula One racing or something like that, right? And you'll see a few of those posts on your main feed as well. It also automatically adds them to this list over here called pages and public figures. And this is everything that I've liked. And you notice the quality is way lower than the main feed. There's a lot of memes. There's a lot of cat photos on here. There's a lot of personal photos.
Robert, at some point I would love to get you to do this. The problem is it scrolls by so fast, we can't see the result. And it does seem like this is a technique that requires a PhD in Facebook. So let's I'm not kidding. I want you to come over and spend some time. We'll do a special and how to scobalize your feed. And I'd be very curious. I'd be willing to try it. We have somebody in the chat room, KB Sriram, who is actually interesting. He's written a script to use Facebook's knowledge graph API or Facebook graph API using some Java code. He downloads just what he wants from Facebook. He actually doesn't ever go to Facebook. This is how I want to use Facebook. So I'm going to download his code and see.
There's a lot of ways to use all these tools.
It's interesting that Facebook's that makes. It's pretty clear, and we're going to move on because this is incredibly boring to most people. But
the chat room's having fun with it.
it's very clear.
Because we're all nerds in the chat room. Thank you, chat room.
And by the way, it's a number of people pointed out lynda.com has a tutorial on getting Facebook running. My guess is it's not anywhere near as bizarre and sophisticated as what Robert is doing.
Yeah.
And as you say, Robert, I doubt many people, if any, are doing this on Facebook.
I've put thousands of hours into Facebook.
See, that's just the last thing in the world I'd ever want to do. But
it's like getting an Apple II.
It's interesting. It's interesting. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. You're creating.
And if you get a Ferrari, you're going to need to go to the racetrack and learn
Ferrari doesn't keep moving the brake pedal. And the problem with spending this kind of energy in Facebook is tomorrow they could change it all and everything you've done will stop working. Absolutely, because they've done that before.
Right, but you're also right about Google Plus could do the same thing. Google Plus.
Anybody could. That's why. But I'm not going to put 1,000 hours into any of these because that could be tomorrow completely wasted energy.
Well, I find them to be where the people are and therefore where the information is.
I know that. What about their strategy, which it looks to be clear now that Facebook, and I think this is brilliant, has the strategy. They don't really care if you spend most of your time at the blue page. In fact, I noticed my daughter, I watch her, she's 22, using her smartphone. She goes to Facebook because she's got groups there, her dorm group and her friends from one school and another school, and she'll check up on them. Then she goes to Instagram to see what the picture's there. She probably isn't fully aware of the fact that she's never left Facebook by going to Instagram. It's just another branch. Mike Elgin, our news director, has posited, and I think he's right, that in a few years, Facebook may have 100 apps.
Yep.
And they don't care because what's very interesting is to watch my daughter not really ever leave Facebook, but in fact, you know, use Facebook, and Messenger being extracted from Facebook now as a separate app, WhatsApp. She said in Mexico she used WhatsApp. Everybody there used WhatsApp. She never left the Facebook ecosystem. And yet it seemed like she was. I think that's, to me, is a very smart move on Facebook.
I predict that they're working on a work version of Facebook. I don't know if they'll call it Facebook. They might call it something like Workbook or something. Mm-hmm. But Zuckerberg is running Facebook on a version of Facebook that we can't see. And I find that's interesting. And I'm sure he's working on the search feature that Twitter has. So, and my former boss is at Twitter. So he's working hard to make sure that people stay addicted to Twitter and don't go to Facebook.
Twitter has its own structural issues. There's the troll issue because it's so easy at Twitter to create a phony account. And it's whack-a-mole to stop trolls. And we've seen a lot of people of late really complain about that on Twitter.
The one thing you did say that was very astute, they are changing the rules every week. Every week I notice something changes about the news feed. It generally gets better, but sometimes it gets worse in a little way. But the trend line is clear. It's going like this, and it's getting better. It's dramatically better than it was a year ago, partly because I put in more work on it and given it more signal, but also because the feed is changing and what they want through the feed is changing. And they do have the ability to turn you off. They do have the ability to turn up the knob on you and get you more distribution.
Or post happy thoughts so you'll have happy posts.
And that's why they might turn you up. They might say, you know, everybody's feed doesn't have enough happiness right now. Everybody's talking about a tragedy. Well, they might look for somebody who has happiness.
How come you're sitting there on Fox and Friends, you don't pull up a Facebook feed?
That's a great question. I mean, I do, when we ask a question sort of the day of a story that might be controversial and we want to see where, you know, and see 50-50 response, you know, half the people torn by this story or this story. And I like to see the responses from people. And we post a story on our Facebook page, you know, we'll get thousands of responses during the show. And it's great to see all those responses. But I don't go there for news, typically breaking news during the show. It just doesn't seem...
You don't know.
I don't know. I don't ever see it in my feed. So I guess I don't, because I don't see it in my feed, I don't think to go there. When I go on Facebook, the stuff that I end up seeing is old, you know, not old information, but it certainly doesn't feel like it's breaking.
Robert would say that's your fault.
Well, no, all you have to do is follow my tech news list. I've done the work, right? So you don't have to do the work.
Tim, what?
My your tech news list. So for instance, Robert, if I post something, I don't know if I'm in your tech news list.
You sure are.
That I am. But if I post something in there, for instance, I posted this Kickstarter project on this awesome butter knife that I want, and I want it right now.
Yeah.
And I flipped it from Flipboard because I added it to my technology magazine on Flipboard, and it's awesome. So will that, because it's, I mean, how does it, you say your technology feed is fantastic, but how does your technology feed know to remove pictures of my kids and just put my butter knife?
It does.
Somehow. It's magic.
Look, do you see kids' photos? I mean, there's Dennis.
I've seen no kids' photos.
I'm just fascinated by why that does it.
It knows when you talk about tech versus when you tag your kids in the photo. That's exactly how it works.
I feel like no social media
look at my tech feed just right now. CNET, Hacker.
What are
News,
the dates? What are the dates and
Sean
times?
Gallagher.
Though? Are those all
24 minutes away?
13 minutes. Those are all pretty current.
Technology blog.
Are you sorting that by recent or are you sorting it by?
No, I am just clicking on the list.
When it's a list, it's everything. It's not filtering.
It's unfiltered. So it would be chronological.
Design,
so it's chronological.
Gizmodo.
Okay.
Facebook Newswire.
I started this by saying Twitter won the earthquake. But
now here's the first thing that Jeremiah, who's an analyst, has a wedding photo.
See what I've done? That's a wedding photo. That's exciting.
You're holding Facebook wrong.
It's an engine.
Somebody actually had an interesting call on the radio show today because a guy said, all of a sudden I have a very limited bandwidth because I'm using a MiFi, and all of a sudden I went way over the cap, and I realized it was because of the autoplay videos on my Facebook stream. How do I turn that off?
There is a way.
I found the setting, but that's interesting. I didn't ever think of that, but that is probably a significant increase in bandwidth use.
Yeah, they said that they would basically do some caching on mobile devices when you're on Wi-Fi. But if you're using a MiFi, then it really has no idea whether or not you're actually on a local Wi-Fi connection or a remote one. So, that's very unfortunate.
Yeah. Anyways, the chat room is getting bored now.
Oh, they're bored. They've been bored since day one. That's a congenital condition.
They're all nerds. They want to talk about real
We're all ADD. The truth is, I don't mind going on a little bit on this, because you and I have been offline talking about this.
Yeah,
and I am sincere in saying I would like you to come up and we'll do a special on how to scobalize your Facebook, because I and you can coach me. And I would love to see this.
You know, at Rackspace, I'm having these arguments with my boss. He's really studying LinkedIn, and he sees a lot of value in LinkedIn. And
I think what I might come away with is that, look, no social network is perfect for any one purpose, but each of us has I think most people now use all or as many as possible and in different ways and are satisfied in different ways, right?
Three or four, you know.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Most people have Snapchat and Facebook and LinkedIn, maybe Google Plus.
Yeah.
You know.
I actually re-upped at LinkedIn. I had deleted my LinkedIn account because I thought
people who aren't on a lot of social networks are weird.
Well, they think you're weird, Robert. So
exactly.
It's pretty much mutual. We're going to take a break. Robert Scoble is here. Tim Stevens is here. We got Clayton Morris out at Lake Tinkywink. How's the Read Quick app doing? Doing well?
It was doing well. You know, it was actually chosen as the app of the week a few weeks ago for a week. So that was insane.
I mean, do you get paid even though they're giving it away when they do that?
No. But, you know, to have, you know, many, many millions of people download the app and people all over the world write in just wonderful things. I mean, I was blown away by the response from people. Really, really. It was just such a special week and seeing people who maybe couldn't afford the app before saying, you know, I couldn't afford it before, but this really has changed the way that I read the papers for school now. And it was really, really touching, you know, because I built it as you know, just as a scratch your own itch thing for myself. And it just to see like millions of responses from people was just so, yeah.
Are you going to pull a Kevin Rose? Actually. Are you going to drop out of the television business and go whole hog on on apps?
No.
You see Kevin did that? He's kind of stepped back at Google Ventures. And
he's
building an app. No. He posts pictures last night of them staying up late writing something. We don't know what.
No, I've loved television since I was a little kid sneaking downstairs and watching Carson and Letterman. So it's in my blood to be in television. I built Read Quick as a way to supplement and read, you know, news fast for my job. So it's really a supplement for that. So, but it's doing really well. And I'm really curious, and we can talk about this later, just with the different size iPhones, how this, you know, what the, I was thinking about this week, really, what is the definition of a universal app anymore with the different phone sizes, you know, 5.5 inch screen, 4.7 inch iPad mini, iPad Air, what does that mean anymore? What features do you not enable for a larger screen, smaller screen? So I'm kind of going through that right now.
That's a good topic for when we come back. We are getting close to, we think, to an iPhone launch. I wonder what September 9th will bring. Let's talk about it. But first, a word from Gazelle. Actually, if you've got an iPhone, I got a tip for you. It is likely we're going to see new phones from Motorola next week, a new iPhone in 2 weeks. Perhaps new phones, the Galaxy Note 4 in the next couple of weeks. IFA's coming up in Berlin. We'll probably see new stuff there. And I can tell you one thing for sure. The minute they announce a new iPhone, your current iPhone is going to drop in value. It's dropping right now. Go to Gazelle and lock that value in. This is your chance to get some money for your old stuff to help pay for the new stuff. GAZELLE.com. You very likely have a few other gadgets in your gadget drawer that you're not using. Think of it as bundles of greenbacks in that drawer, just sitting there collecting dust. This could be money. Right now, by the way, when you lock in the price for your iPhone, they're going to extend it. Normally, it's 30 days. They're going to extend it all the way to October 10th, giving you time, no matter when the ship date is on the new iPhone, no matter how long the lines are, to get that new iPhone, get your data transferred over, and then ship the iPhone back. But that price will be the price from today, and that's the beauty part. Go to GAZELLE.com and sell your cell phone, your tablet, your iPad, your Surface, your Apple computer, your Samsung, your Galaxy, all of that. They'll buy it. And there's three ways you can get paid. You can get a check if you just want, you know, standard, just we'll send you a check. You can get a PayPal credit. That's a little more quick. And if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, I'd get the Amazon gift card because they bumped that up by 5%. Let's see. But, you know, let's just see what an old iPad mini is worth today. Wi-Fi iPad mini. 110 bucks. That's like just sitting in the drawer. Wouldn't you? You know, get this, and you're locking it in for 30 days. Actually, you're locking it in if it's an iPhone until October 10th. Now, when you get the new phone and you're ready to ship the old phone in, you check out, and they'll send you a box, prepaid postage. If you forget to wipe the data, don't worry. They'll do it for you. Then they'll send you the money. It's a really great way to sell your gadgets. The fast and simple way. If you're upgrading to a new iPad, new MacBook, do it with Gazelle. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. But again, do not delay, because those gadgets are not gaining in value. And the minute the announcement happens, they're going to plummet. What? 5S with worth how much unlocked? $300. I'm going to make money. I'm going to make money. New iPhone. We're going to see, you know, I'm thinking the rumors are congealing.
Yeah, definitely.
That's probably not a very auspicious image in your mind, but the rumors feel like they're kind of converging, maybe a better word, onto two iPhones, a 4.7-inch iPhone and a 5.5. You think we'll see both, Tim, on September 9th?
Yeah, I'm inclined to think that we will see both devices on that date. I don't know whether they'll launch simultaneously. There's definitely a chance that Apple will say one's going to be out next week and the other one maybe will be a month later. Certainly we've heard issues of low yields on some of their display componentry that might be causing some shortages when it comes to supply. But short of that, I think they would probably like to have both launched simultaneously. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes, how they message the two, how they differentiate the two. Because... you know, they did launch, of course, the 5C not that long ago, and the messaging there was very much, you know, this is not a cheaper phone. This is just a different type of phone. But I think that these are going to have to be a little bit more focused devices when it comes to the messaging, a little bit more focused in terms of usage and, you know, maybe aiming toward professionals versus just casual users and that kind of thing. So I think we'll see some interesting marketing and some interesting advertising, and I'm curious to see what the message is on September 9th.
Reuters says because of the new display, the new in-cell touchscreens they're using, they're having a hard time getting those from LG and Sharp. And that's one concern that might hold up either or both of the phones. This makes it a little bit thinner because the in-cell touch panel eliminates some layers.
Every year, talk about how the newest device will be delayed from Apple, and they're never right.
Yeah, I mean, I understand these rumors are complete speculation in most cases, although yeah. I do trust the supply rumors a little bit more because, frankly, it's hard to keep a lid on the suppliers. Even, right. You know, even Foxconn is starting to leak a little bit about, you know, yeah. this stuff. So
are you going to go with the, I mean, my sources are telling me we're going to see two phones for
you've,
sure.
You've had some very good sources in the past, Clayton.
Right.
Are you still in touch with those folks?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I really think we're going to see two new phones. The question for me is whether or not, I don't know. I mean, walk around with just to test, obviously, the larger,
that's
much
the,
larger.
The 1520, the Nokia 1520 there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, to me, it's just too big. I mean, but I'm not a senior citizen yet, so maybe I would enjoy a much larger iPhone.
And I like a big
you
phone.
Like the Note. You like the Note, right?
I have that 1520. I loved it until I bricked it.
I'm hearing that, obviously, the screen resolution on the larger phone is going to be, you know, much better.
Well, actually, that's a good question. What mm-hmm. is the resolution going to be on the 4.7 and the 5.5? Do we know?
What I'm hearing from a couple of sources is 3x Retina on the larger screen.
That's actually the pixels per inch.
Right.
You're saying 3x? 40, that would be like 600?
And Gruber actually had a great post about it the other day, too, where he broke it down. And this is jiving with what I've been hearing as well. 461 PPI. So... on the 5.5 inch, so like, what did he say? 2208, is that right? 2208 times 1248 on the 5.5 inch screen.
Now, the 5.5 is 2208 by 1242.
Yeah,
and that would be 461 pixels per inch. Ironically, more than the smaller iPhones. You'd think those would have a higher density. The 4.7 would be 1334 by 750. Is this because it's doubled and tripled? Is that why they come up with this?
I think so, yeah. I'm terrible with math. I have to get out my abacus. But the amount of time that John spent going through all of the different variables, but it's jiving. In
John used, get ready for this, the Pythagorean theorem.
Right.
I remember the name. I have no idea. Is that A squared plus B squared equals C squared? What is that?
Yeah, I think okay.
so. Okay. Well, that sure helps me.
Right.
Did Gruber have to go back and get his eighth grade math book or what? I don't.
He must have.
Wow. That's impressive.
But it raises serious questions, though, I think, too, when I'm thinking about, you know, some of the different apps that when I think about ReadQuick, for instance, about, well, you know, there's a difference. We made it a universal app for a reason, right? But there's different versions of it. So you, what does it mean to have the app running on an iPad Air, an iPad Mini? Then what does it mean to have it on such a small device when you're in line at a Starbucks? Well, then what does it now mean to have it on a 5.5-inch screen? What sorts of buttons can we employ there? What sorts of things will pop up? What sorts of tools will pop up on that screen? And I know that obviously Apple seems to be pushing developers in that direction to really consider these different screen sizes when they're building their apps tall. I know there's been plenty of rumors out there about...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say with split screen apps now, we see with the Surface.
Well, we know iOS 8 will have that.
Right.
Right.
So a lot of developer questions I'm having
Past
couple of weeks.
His point is that if you make the 4.7-inch 1334 by 750, that's double the pixel density. Double's easy to do, you know, for a developer. You want to do multiples. You don't want to do 1.68 times because then that's tough. The 5.5-inch, he's thinking, will be 3 times the density. And I'll read you his reasoning. First, I'm assuming that both the 4.7 and 5.5-inch rumors are true. Second, I'm assuming a 16:9 aspect ratio for both displays. Given these assumptions and the Pythagorean theorem, it's easy to create a spreadsheet model that gives you the pixels per inch resolution for a given pixel count. Given the height and width in pixels, we could solve for the diagonal in pixels, a squared plus b squared equals c squared, starting with value... Oh, forget it. He's just showing off now. Anyway, but that makes sense because you want to make it easy for developers. And but did you see the Android fragmentation graphic that came out this week? And it shows you what Apple's trying to avoid. There are so many different Android devices... And so many different. This is the graphic for Android users. This is from OpenSignal. This looks like my hard drive
defragging.
Each rectangle represents a unique Android device. According to OpenSignal, which makes software for mobile devices that track cell phone towers and Wi-Fi signals, so they're getting this data from the field. There are, get this, 18,796 different unique Android devices. Imagine you're. Do you do ReadQuick for Android?
No, I've been. You know.
Now you know
I've been
why.
Going back and forth with it for months. I mean, really. I mean, people ask for it, but I just
look at this. This is the various Android screen sizes that you have to deal with. They're all over the place now. iPad and iPhone. It's very linear, and this is the key. If you add the new iPhone, it goes right in here in the box. You know, it's not nearly so crazy. Android versions over time. These graphs are just bizarre. 91% of iOS devices run the latest version. So that's also simplification for you.
But there's a graph missing there, and that is Android sales versus iOS sales. That would tell a very different story, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Android has 80% market share globally. 80%. And frankly, I'm using this OnePlus One. I love it. And this is a five. I don't know what this is. Five and a half. Can't remember. It's big.
What is that one?
This is the crazy one where they wanted women to put tattoos on their butt. You know what? The OnePlus One.
Did that marketing campaign work?
Did not work for them. No. However, this is the irony of it. If it's $350 for a 64 gig, and it's a really great phone. I don't know. I am very intrigued by the new iPhone, and I know I will get one. I'm actually, the things that have been keeping me from, that got me off the iPhone over the last couple of years are screen size and the god-awful keyboard, and both of these are going to be solved in the new iPhone. You'll be able to
a couple
put
questions I have
keyboards.
Too is will there be any difference between the two devices for features? You know, because they're both being released at the same time, will there be a wow feature in the larger iPhone? I'm hearing better battery, but that's to be expected with a larger phone. But you know what I'm saying? Like, the 4S had Siri, the 4 did not. But right. because they're being released at the same time, probably the same camera, everything else, you know, everything else will be the same. My question, though, will be, will one of them have larger storage? Will that be an incentive to get the larger iPhone because it has an increased storage capacity for business or something? If you're on the road and you need that extra storage, I don't know. But everything else probably will be the same.
Thoughts, Tim Stevens? You covered this for years at Engadget.
Yeah. We've been waiting for 128 gig phones for a long time now, and this would certainly be a good time for them to do that. Battery life, absolutely. I would definitely expect a much bigger battery life from the larger device. I'm curious what they advertise it as. You know, they've always pretty much advertised the same battery life for each new generation of iPhone. It'll be interesting, and I think good for them to maybe finally step away from that and show something a little bit different, you know, with these new larger devices. And pixel density does play a role in that, too. The higher pixel density, usually need a more powerful backlight, which then decreases your battery life. So that's probably another issue that they're trying to deal with if indeed those display yields are indeed lower than they are supposed to be. But I think battery life should be better. Pixel density higher is great, of course. In terms of features, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about NFC now, which is interesting. Of course, you know, that's something
that surprised me. We saw a schematic that showed more RAM and NFC. Now, whether, again, yeah. another, we don't know if it's true or not. But that would be a bit of a turnaround for Apple.
It definitely would be, but that could be something that maybe we'd only see on the larger phone, you know. But then again, we, you know, saw a bit of a turnaround on USB 3.0 as well. So maybe it's the same sort of thing here.
Yeah, I'm hearing NFC as well. And I had heard that Apple wanted to do, you know, a significant move for Passbook last year, but really wasn't ready for prime time with what they wanted to do with NFC. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, perhaps who takes the stage with Apple or at least who's featured with Apple. Because, you know, I think about NFC and I think about the stores that I would like to see involved with an NFC play. I hate carrying my wallet. You know, I've got that giant, you know, like Costanza-sized wallet. And, you know, now when I go into the city, I just take my phone and I can buy my my train ticket using my phone. If I want to get Starbucks, I use my phone.
Robert, you're an iBeacon fan. Is there anything iBeacon can do that NFC can't, or vice versa?
NFC needs to be close. iBeacon can be seen 100 meters away, if I remember.
Apple's clearly bent on iBeacon. Why would they do NFC?
Because it's cheap and it's deployed in a lot of places. And They're wanting to get into the payments business. They want to get into Square's business. So you're going to take your iPhone into some place.
It's funny because Square's getting out of that business, by the way. Square.
Right. Losing $100 million. I don't know how lucrative. But they've already got your credit card. So that's the thing with Apple. I mean, think about how many purchases you have.
Apple has everybody's credit card. Right.
Yeah, we should tell people what iBeacon is. It's a little radio that costs less than $10. It spits three numbers into the air every second. And your phone, whether it be Android or iPhone, can see how close it is. Your iPhone, if you have an iPhone, it has one of these radios in it. It's not on, but the iBeacon software can turn it on. So if you get a new app from Target or Macy's, or if you go to Coachella next year, they had beacons on the field there. So as you walk around the field, stuff can happen on your iPhone that can show you where you are. You know,
it feels to me like Apple could do everything that you can do with NFC. They could do with iBeacon, ranging it and so forth.
Yeah.
And they've put a big bet on iBeacon. They kind of own iBeacon. Why would they even consider NFC?
Security. I mean, I have to think something with Touch ID and security and being able to hold that information.
You can do the same thing with iBeacon. You could say, no, I have to be within a centimeter or I'm not going to do it. You can do that, right, Robert?
I don't know.
iBeacon knows how close you are.
Yeah, but there's a latency, so it takes a few seconds holding it there.
Okay.
NFC, you can just tap and
it's
go.
Right away.
And it's very, very...
And we are woefully behind the times when you look at people. I know our mutual friend Renee Ritchie talks about, I mean, just it's crazy to think that Canada, how far advanced they are for payments with NFC up there. Everything from train tickets to gas payments to food purchases, all NFC enabled. But they, you know, come to the United States and we're woefully behind the times. I think of some of the partners, like with Google. I go to Home Depot quite a bit, and at the, you know, the checkout at Home Depot, I believe they have the, you know, Google Google Wallet and PayPal. But this is one of the rare occasions where I see like Google Wallet payment, you know, out in the wild. So I think it'll be important to have, you know, who appears on stage with Apple for an NFC announcement in a few weeks.
Because one of
the things
people are using NFC for a lot now, it's not payments, but is tap to pair, where the NFC does the Bluetooth pairing kind of automatically. And I see devices in the store all over the place where you just tap your phone to it and it will do, it'll handle all the ugly details of a Bluetooth pairing. You can't do it on an iPhone. That might be a reason. Even iHome, which makes all those iPhone gadgets, has NFC tap to pair. That might be a reason too, not just payments. But you're right, there's the money is in payments. So somebody in the chat room said, here we go again, the annual iPhone will have NFC fantasy.
this year
is going to happen.
This year, I would be really surprised if it doesn't this year.
Yeah,
but I'd be willing to.
To
drink on it.
Wow, you pair.
That's a stretch.
You pair NFC. He'll drink on anything, folks. Don't. You pair NFC with Touch ID, the fingerprint reader in the iPhone, and now right. You have something very interesting because you have additional layer of security. Exactly. I'm going to trust something with a Touch ID and NFC much more than I am a credit card with an NFC in it.
Right, like coin. I mean, I would love to be able, I mean, in partnering with a lot of the major credit card companies and payment structure that way, so I could just put my credit card information right inside my iPhone, type it in the way that you would keep on, you know, with inside of, help me the name, inside the... Well, inside now, you can keep that with what's the name of Apple's 1Password structure?
Keychain.
Keep credit cards on Keychain. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. You can already keep your credit cards on file within right. Keychain. So enabling Keychain support through NFC and being able to pay with the credit card of choice
right.
upon checkout without having to carry your wallet, your MetroCard, and all these other things would be fantastic.
You know, I totally buy into this and the idea that Apple can have this ecosystem. They've got the credit cards. They have the whole thing. But so many times we've seen Apple poised, really ready to do something like this and just unable to pull the trigger for whatever reason. Passbook's a good example where they've had that for how many years? And they've really done nothing with it. It's got my Target card in it and an airplane boarding pass.
Yeah, I was really disappointed after a long – I was super excited about it. You know, you think Amtrak and mobile boarding passes and all of those things. And after launch, it was like – it was impossible to even figure out how to get it from the app into Passbook to be able to use the little certificate, the little share sheet certificate.
Whose fault
that you
is
would
that?
Take with you? Well, I mean, it seemed like, and it was using some weird, before iOS 8, it was using some weird URL scheme, right? Wasn't
right.
it?
That was the only way you could do a handoff before extensions. Mm-hmm.
So now with extensions, I think you're going to see a whole new, you know, a whole new life for Passbook right. using extensions. Before it was some really janky URL handoff. And most of the apps, you would wonder why Delta or Delta could do it, but Southwest didn't know how to do it.
Right.
or,
right.
you know, United have
the, I have to blame Apple.
Their app, but couldn't do it.
Because it's Apple's job then to go to all those people and say, here's how you do it. We'll help you. We'll do it with you. I'll assign an engineer to you. We'll make sure it happens. Apple just seems to, whether they lack the resources, they lack the commitment, they don't have the leadership from the top. Something's missing that's keeping them from capitalizing on iBeacon. Right, Robert? I mean, iBeacon's been around for 2 years now.
No. iBeacon came out after my book shipped, so last September.
Okay. Well, it's not that long then. A year.
And it's,
I don't
it's,
think it's really
it's MO, really
and to hold the hands of developers like that and really try to bring corporate partners on board. You know, I think that they just expect that everybody's going to want to be on board and want to be a part of it. And so I think that probably plays part of the reason for the lack of success. And I also wonder how much, you know, talking about NFC and why we had to wait so long for how much they really expected Bluetooth LE to take off. And maybe they were making some movements behind the scenes to try to get that rolled out into point of sale terminals and ultimately just got no traction whatsoever. Yeah. And they're finally, you know, throwing in the bag and going with NFC now.
I agree with that. And I heard rumblings of that a few years ago that Apple seemed to be all in with Bluetooth LE. And
see,
I don't
that's
know
the
what
risk,
happened.
Though, of doing NFC. It you're flip flopping. And as you know, Clayton Morris, working at Fox and Friends, flip-flopping is bad. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
I'm wearing sneakers right now.
Could not resist. Yeah, he's taking his suit off, folks. It's a different person entirely. I feel like Apple, for some reason, cannot pull the trigger on these. They get these great technologies. They get these great ideas. You sit there, you watch the WWDC speech at iOS 8, and you go, yeah, when they integrate that all together, it's a whole brave new world. And then...
Well, nothing. The proof will be in the pudding, right? When we saw the announcement of HomeKit and the health initiative from Apple, right? We're all pontificating about how great this is going to be for blood pressure being sent right to your doctor. And, if you live in rural West Virginia, a place that I know well, and I was a reporter years ago, I mean, it was like 45 minutes to an hour to get to a heart center.
Yeah.
And that's a real concern for people that live in those areas. Yeah. And certainly I led a panel on healthcare at CES, and we talking about the inefficiency of getting information to, you know, certain parts of the world, being able to have smartphones in those areas with heart rate monitors on the back to be able to put your thumbprint on there to have it read that information. So can HomeKit carry the torch? Exactly what you're saying, Leo, and HomeKit and also the health initiative. Here it is. Here's our HomeKit. Now, are we going to work with a few big partners to make sure? Are we going to work with Hue? Are we going to work with Nest, owned by Google, to make some of these big things happen? Or are we just going to wait and let it die on the vine again?
Isn't that part of the problem, is that Apple wants to keep it all to itself, and it doesn't work that way? Although, as Jeff Needles points out, this is endemic in the tech industry. Google has how many initiatives has Google announced and then just forgotten about? Yeah, right. I think there's a lack of follow through in general. All these companies are ADD and they just go, what? Oh, yeah. Squirrel. And then they're off doing something
else. It's hard. These technologies need time to get rolled out and get people to understand their value. I've given several speeches in the last couple months, some to computer science people, and they have no idea what beacons are. Yeah. And so it's an education process. It takes time. This is why Doug Engelbart got kicked out of his own research lab in the 1970s.
The inventor of the mouse and the Windows.
Yeah, because his ideas were too ahead of even his friends at the research lab.
Yeah.
Well, even, you know, the companies like Delta, United, and those would roll out these apps so you could have mobile boarding passes that weren't Passbook necessarily enabled, but even when they integrated with Passbook later. And you would go up to the attendants. I don't know if you would notice that when you go to the different gates, and they would look at you like you're an idiot.
What, give me, you have a boarding pass? No.
Right. You have a boarding pass on your phone. That's, what is that?
What?
Now you got to go back to the counter.
Now I do it on my watch. And they ignore me there, really? Too.
Yeah, I get some funny looks when I do that, too. Especially when it's the wrong boarding pass on your watch and you have no way to go back to the right boarding pass.
I got stuck at a TSA kiosk because they it wouldn't work. And they said, well, you have the email that came in. I'm going like this on my phone. Everybody's going by me. I know. Well, it was like, I finally got in, though. I did. It's flaky. Speaking of, you mentioned coin. How many of you bought the $55 one card to rule them all? Robert, of course, you love every new technology.
It's anything new is really great.
Yeah, love it. Clayton, you didn't buy it, but you reported on it.
Yeah, I didn't buy it yet, but I...
Yeah, it's a very important word, and you want to keep that yet going. Tim, did you fall for coin?
I have not invested yet. No, I'm fascinated by the concept, but I'm still optimistic that credit cards in general are going to be retired in the not-too-distant future. Yeah. So I'm holding out hope for that.
So they took $55 from lots of people. We don't know how many total, but lots of people, and they charged them. Coin is delayed now at least until spring 2015. So,
By the way, there's a couple of companies. Tapingo is one of them.
I think it's Tap and Go.
The guy who invented it says it's Tapingo. So
what? It's Tapingo?
Tapingo is how he says it.
Oh, Lord.
Because I called it Tapingo.
It's tap and go. You tap it and you go.
He said, no, it's Tapingo.
It's Tapingo.
Ralph Lauren
is cool.
Is it GIF or is it?
It's GIF. Everybody knows it's GIF. It doesn't matter what Tapingo says.
I know, but it's the same argument, right? We're going to have this argument for 20 years. If you're a college kid at Santa Clara University, you use it to buy everything, your sandwich, your coffee in the morning, your books, And there's a machine in the sandwich shop. So when you say, I want a sandwich, it sends the order to the machine. It lights up, it beeps, and it spits out a receipt. The receipt goes into the workflow of the restaurant. And you walk in and pick up your sandwich and you leave. You don't hand them a credit card. And already 70% of all the transactions at Santa Clara University are going through Topingo.
So and is that an NFC technology? What is the technology?
No, it's... it's you don't even need that because you know you're there at the store, right?
It's geofencing.
Geofencing, right?
And see, and that's who cares I thought if was the problem with sandwich. I thought that was the problem with Square Wallet, and was that the geofencing was so inaccurate that you couldn't have two stores next to each other use it.
Yeah, this works, and it's working at scale for Santa Clara University and 25 other campuses. I think 75 campuses are getting it this fall. So he's growing like a weed, like a virus. And in 6 years, I bet we're all going to be using it for everything.
That's
and,
pretty cool.
He's going to own a cut of every transaction on the internet. So he could be a trillionaire if he is successful.
You know, what's amazing is that he came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, well, and Square is going out of this business.
His dad's a famous entrepreneur. His dad started Zoran. And his family has a lot of.
I think that's pronounced Charday. No, I'm just joking. That's an old joke. I'm sorry.
I got it, Leo.
Thank you.
Anyways, he's a smart kid.
Yeah.
He's tap, one of those kids,
tap and go, aka Topingo.
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 And you can't use it if you're not a college kid. I remember some other company doing the same thing.
Yeah. So it's iPhone and Android, and then it's an app.
Yeah.
And so it just knows you're in line. Never wait in line. You place an order. Delivery orders appear at your door.
Yeah.
So is it just ordering remotely?
You have to go remote ordering. You pick it up. It's also a contextualizer, and that's why I got interested in it. Because after buying iced lattes at 9 a.m. every morning, it'll say, would you just like your normal iced latte today?
Oh, wow.
And wow. It saves you on scrolling.
If Google did that, there'd be protests.
Oh, there'll be protests for this company as well. It's just nobody knows about it yet.
Yeah. That's because they're pronouncing their name wrong.
Topingo.
T-A-P-I-N. It's, you know, it looks like Topingo, to be fair. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. Scoble's here, the Scobalizer. Will you do that? Will you come up here? Can I book you and have can you come up for an hour?
I'll come up and teach. And we can trade. You can teach me about other things.
I don't know anything.
For people who don't know why you're Leo Laporte.
Why am I Leo Laporte?
Why are you famous and a big deal? Because you would help people on the radio and you would know the most bizarre dish about OS2 and Windows and the Macintosh. And
I still do, but it's not really much use anymore. That's the sad thing.
That's true, but that's why you're sitting on the ball.
But right? When I get questions about OS2, I can really get in there and leap in there.
You know, for the 15 people who are still holding out.
Loop Pay, is that something you used at Boston University? Or Northeastern, wherever the hell you went to school? Everywhere, Loop Pay. That's a similar idea as to... It's a fob. NFC, probably, then. No? It sends a magnetic pulse.
The problem is the thing that Topingo actually solves is integrating into the restaurant and having the restaurant pay attention to your order so that it's ready when you come in.
Yeah. But it also solves Costanza walletitis.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's really...
Where do I come up with these? It's my job to
see
startups.
That's what he does for Rackspace.
I go around the world and study the future. I'm just seeing stuff before most other people. So
Robert Scoble never met a technology he didn't like.
I want to see it all.
Tim Stevens is also here. He is, among other things at CNET, doing a lot of automotive stuff, which is cool.
It is cool. It's a lot of fun.
Anything you new and exciting you want to plug or promote? Or
We just had Pebble Beach last weekend, which I sadly didn't get to go out to. But we did have our X-Car team was there, and they did some amazing videos. Did some
that new Mercedes concept car. That's what I want.
Yes. Yeah, and there's the new Aston Martin concept car was there as well. I think the DP100 is called. So a lot of great video footage out of there. Some great galleries as well. Out of Monterey, hopefully I'll be able to go next year. But then we're not too far away from the Paris Auto Show. That's early October, which is always amazing, beautiful concept cars out of Paris. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
I don't remember. The Carmel Car Show used to be the Concours d'Elegance. It used to be all about, beautifully fixed up cars and Lamborghinis. I know this new concept. That was always at the auto shows you to get the concept cars. They're now, they didn't want to drive them around, but
they still do the Concours is still there. That's still the highlight of the week. But now it's become it's much more of a commercial thing these days. So a lot of manufacturers, they know that a lot of the car journalists are going to be there, so they've kind of used audience to start to launch concept cars and that kind of thing as well. So that's part of the reason why that's happening. But still, the focus is by and large still on the Concours and the beautiful old cars. I think it was the first post-war Ferrari to win, I think, in a very long time.
This, to me, the new Mercedes looks very much like the Naboo starship from episode one. Does it not? Am I wrong?
It does.
Yeah.
You can drive it in Gran Turismo 6, too, if you want to take it for a spin.
Can you?
Yeah. I was actually there at the launch of that car, and it was kind of funny. There was a guy standing off on the side of the stage that they drove it out on with an RC car controller, and that was how he controlled this concept car. With a giant RC car controller. There's actually nobody in the car. It was him driving off the side of the stage.
Is this chrome?
It is chrome, yeah.
Okay. So it's going to look like a DeLorean in a few years. You have to have a full-time shiner.
I don't know if it's raw aluminum or not.
And it doesn't look like it has wheels. I mean, it has wheels. It doesn't look like it has tires.
Yeah, it's a car from the future for sure. That will never go into production, but there
is... In the future, they'll have no tires?
Well, very very skinny tires. They're working on a Porsche 911 competitor.
It's a chamfered edge right there. You're seeing it in person.
Thank you, Johnny Ive.
Johnny Ive would love. This is the best Mercedes we've ever made. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix, who do GoToMeeting. I've told you so many times how important GoToMeeting is. It's, in fact, the only way we meet at the Twit Brick House, because nowadays many of the people we meet with are not here, just like this show. They're spread out all over the world. That shouldn't stop you. Thanks to the internet, we can meet practically face-to-face with people using GoToMeeting. They're HD video conferencing, crystal clear. Everybody's got a camera now. You see people just like you're in the same room with them. And because you're using GoToMeeting, you also see their screens, or they see your screens. It's as if you're showing them your PowerPoint presentation or collaborating together on a document. Eliminate the expensive and time-consuming travel. Make those meetings more effective. Everybody knows meetings are kind of the backbone of business, but you don't want to spend more time than you have to. Citrix GoToMeeting makes it easy. And by the way, one low flat rate per month makes it easy to have as many meetings as you need, as long as you want, anytime, anywhere. It is a fabulous system, and I want you to try it free for 30 days. If you visit GoToMeeting.com, you click the Try It Free button, that big orange button there, and use the promo code TWIT, you got 30 days free. I don't think they even ask you for a credit card. It just really is simple. GoToMeeting.com, promo code TWIT, 30 days free from Citrix. It is definitely the way to meet in modern times. It is, in effect, the Mercedes concept car of online meeting. It's funny. I just saw this and I said, I'm not even a car guy. And I said, I want that. Vic Gundotra was there. We now know what Vic is doing since he left Google and Google Plus. He's going to car shows.
Pretty much whatever he wants to, I think, which is great.
He's retired. What else? It's been such a weak week for news, for tech news.
You know what I found interesting? Well, not that you care, but...
I care. No, Clayton, please. Like I beg of you. I care deeply. No,
I was struck by...
You know what I find interesting? Natalie's new profile picture on Facebook.
Oh, I just saw that. Yeah, woo! It just popped up. You know, I took that of her in Portugal. We were in Portugal for a week last fall, right around this
time of year.
She's
getting more and more beautiful. If you don't mind me saying.
She's like a fine wine. She just gets better with age.
Better and better.
Or a fine cheese. Like an aged Gouda.
Okay, just a little tip. Never compare your wife to a fine cheese.
Now, she likes an aged Gouda, too. So she
Anyway, what do you find interesting? I'm sorry.
No, this Microsoft story, and I love Scoble's take on it too, which is that, you know, Microsoft really ought to release Windows 9 sooner rather than later, because many large enterprise or organizations have simply not updated to Windows 8.
I don't know how it could get any sooner. I think September 30th the beta comes out, and it'll be spring for the next version of Windows.
Well, and I thought the piece, there was an interesting article this afternoon, I forget who wrote it, but it struck me because really the point of the piece was around Windows 7 being the issue, that you're going to have to pry Windows 7 from my cold, dead hand.
You know, Windows 2000 was like that.
Exactly.
For a long time. I wouldn't upgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you look around at all the computers at, you know, News Corp building and other, you know, I pop into different offices, you know, across the city. Windows 7 or earlier. None of them are upgrading to Windows 8. So I, you know.
It's.
Robert, you worked at Scoble. You were their kind of their blogger. And
at Microsoft.
I mean, what did I say? Scoble? Scoble. You worked at Scoble?
Scoble Enterprises.
Yeah. Okay. I really am officially now too old to do this show. I'm going to retire. Robert, you worked at Microsoft. What would you do now? I mean, this, you know, Windows 8 clearly was a time bomb. Steven Sinofsky, the man who designed it, gone. Steven Ballmer, the guy who was running the company at the time, gone. Not only gone as CEO, but Ballmer is now out at on the board. He's going to go down and run a basketball team.
I don't know, because Windows is not where my interests are anymore.
Guess what? You're not alone, and that's the problem. Phone.
You know, the world has moved to mobile phone and Microsoft's cloud and a whole range of other things. And soon it'll be wearable computing. Soon being this fall, maybe with an Apple Watch or over the next 5 years, you're going to see a lot of things that you're going to put on your body to study whether you're having a heart attack or having cancer or on and on. Right. You know, their problem is they're being ripped apart from the low end by the Chromebook.
And that's why Microsoft now offers Windows free to anything sub 9 inches.
Yeah, the school teachers are telling me they're going Chromebooks at school because they can buy one for $200 that's really nice, and it has no maintenance cost because there's nothing to it other than a web browser.
Well, and it's
right?
not just that. You know, the
documents.
The documents are in the cloud. If a student loses one, he hasn't lost anything. Google now has this new classroom that is essentially going to replace Moodle and Blackboard in schools, and it's free.
Yeah.
Google is being very strategic with education, and I think smart. So they're eating the business from the low end.
Yeah.
Business has really – enterprises roundly ignored Windows 8 because they don't want to go there.
Yeah, because it's a very different UI and a training cost. Right?
Although, let's be fair, this happens every other Windows.
True, too. Right? I mean, there's still people running
XP.
A crap on.
Yeah, 25% of all Windows users are still running XP. A lot of that's enterprise because they just don't want to retrain. And Windows 7 was fine. There's no real compelling reason to go to a new version of Windows.
If I was at Microsoft working for Satya, I would be focusing all my effort on mobile and just letting Windows rot and you know,
mobile's
going to lose.
Oh, you got bad news, though, because Microsoft has lost mobile already.
I know that. You know that. But that's where I would be focusing all of my effort, because if they don't get involved with mobile, everything falls apart.
And does this new strategy work for Microsoft, being able to piggyback on Android devices?
And iPhone,
like
right?
The
they made a deal. They made a deal with Apple to get rid of Google. So Bing is going to be the search engine, the default search engine in the iPhone this fall in iOS 8. And in return for that, they give Apple Office on iPad and iPhone. And a lot of people are praising those two things.
A lot of people are pissed off, especially Windows Mobile users who are not getting touch first
Anybody who bought Windows Mobile users does not listen to this show, because every time I listen to this show, there's no apps, there's no support, there's no venture capitalist who's investing in it, there's no entrepreneur who's carrying it around. When you go to a hackathon, you don't see them. There's no love for it. It's done. So you have to change that.
No, I don't. did you see Superman? Did you see Man of Steel? Every reporter, Lois Lane, uses a Windows phone.
That's true.
Okay, so they bought their way onto a movie, but nobody loves it.
Right.
You know, nobody in the app ecosystem loves it. I mean,
Those reporters had to be on the cutting edge, right? They're breaking news. Lois Lane, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, and the phone that she's using is the one that gets the least amount of updates and is the slowest to respond.
Very, very briefly, I think, what was it? Was it Ray Donovan? For one season, they were using Windows Phone, and then they quickly, I guess the Microsoft money dropped, dried up.
I spoke at the Grow conference up in Whistler this week,
and
I'm not drunk. I am sad about somebody just said is Scoble drunk. I'm sad about my friend who is in pain in Napa.
Oh, dear.
I just saw that.
I'm so sorry. What's the matter? Do you want to go?
No. I can't do anything because they're not allowed to get anybody that's not professional into the cellars. But there's a lot of people who are digging out their wines in real time in front of me.
Oh, because of the earthquake. Bad news. Yeah. I know. We have friends who owns Silver Oak, and I saw one of the first pictures I saw was just a trashed wine room. Oh, terrible.
So where do I go with this? When I spoke to Grow this week, we asked the audience who has an iPhone, who has an Android phone. It was 80% iPhone or 70% something.
What
like
is
that.
Grow?
Grow is Debbie Lambda's conference for startup entrepreneurs.
So those are all startup people.
Startup people.
Yeah.
But when I did the same question at South by Southwest, same answer. When I go to Web Summit, I asked the same question last year, same answer. When I asked the same question at Lyft, at Web, same answer.
Well, so, I think what's clear is iPhones are being purchased by high-end, upscale technophiles.
Right.
In great numbers, much greater numbers. Android's being purchased by the rank and file, by normal people, people who have less money because they're less expensive worldwide. But there's no room for Windows Phone at all.
Never see a Windows Phone. I mean, I'm in a pretty somewhat populated area, New York City, and I'm on, you know, trains, subway, Times Square, walking through the city.
Oh, no, and that's another thing. Techno elites, rich people, and everybody in Manhattan.
right.
I'm sorry, I left out a
category.
Everybody
at the Ritz, by the way.
Everybody in Manhattan has an iPhone.
Which is rich people.
I don't think, that's why I don't think mobile is the answer for Microsoft. I think the cloud is the answer. Microsoft has always been successful in the cloud. They have a strong cloud product.
But this deal with Apple gives me hope. And if Satya continues to making deals with Apple, then Microsoft might align with the iPhone and start building pieces of it and start building thing, you know, wearables and things that'll work with it.
I would love to see Nokia with iOS on it. That's never
if you're a space alien and you come down to Earth and you no one told you ahead of time who was the winner right now or who was the leader, who was the market share leader, and you have Android devices built
into space alien.
Robert is.
Yeah.
Built into refrigerators. If you were a space alien and you came down and someone said, okay, hey, can you name the most popular smartphone platform right now? And you laid out Windows Phone, Android, and iOS in front of them, you might be inclined to pick up the Windows Phone.
It's beautiful.
It's pretty darn snazzy.
Yeah.
Especially this new HTC One with the Windows Phone on it.
I used to help run a consumer electronics store in the 80s, and I learned one thing about how people buy things. They don't want to appear stupid. And if all of their friends who are the people in this chat room say, you know, there's no apps on this thing, or look, I have both of them. Like Marcus Brownlee carries both of them and all three of them, right?
And he's not a good example because he's a reviewer.
No, but people like that influence us, and if you have a teacher who's really into tech or a friend who's really into tech, you ask him, what should I buy? And he's going to say, well, the iPhone has the best apps. The Windows, the Android phones have the best choice and it's cheaper. And the Windows phone has no support at all. None of us use it. So which one are you going to buy? Right. You're going to buy the one that your friends have.
Right.
And that's the real problem. It's a real problem for Microsoft. And that's why if I was at Microsoft, that's the most interesting problem to work on. And I like to work on interesting problems. I don't like to just...
But what about the cloud?
You know.
What about the cloud? Look,
that matters.
Here's my position on this. Just as in the 90s, Microsoft by creating a solid platform for developers and as close to a universal platform as you can get for PCs, established the PC revolution. There was no question that without Microsoft, there is no PC revolution because they built a platform everybody else could build on. Well, it's clear the PC is not the platform. It's clear there is fragmentation in the mobile space. What is the platform for the 2010s? It's the cloud, because the cloud is cross-platform. And that's where apps should be built. That's where apps are being built. And that's right. where the future is. And Microsoft has a strong play there. And Nadella knows it. He came from the Azure Services division.
The question, though, is how do they monetize that? That's a very different sort of thing. If you're charging somebody, you know, $100 for each new version of Windows or $200 or a lot more for each new version of Office, you know, they can't charge for Office anymore because of Google Drive and everything we've been speaking about. Cloud is great, but they're basically giving away OneDrive at this point. I don't know how many gigs of OneDrive storage that I have that have been shoveled at me over the years, and I have no interest in paying for it. And, you know, even if they do build out OneDrive to be the ultimate solution for consumers, and they do build out a lot of great services around that, is there any possible way of monetizing the cloud that will bring them anywhere near where they used to be when everyone was buying Windows and everybody was buying Office? And I don't think
that's very interesting. In fact, there is even the rumor, and it's apparently credible, according to Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theroux, that the next version of Windows will be free. So that really does put them in a very difficult position. If you can't sell devices,
well, I don't know about
you can't
that.
Sell software.
They still load it up with a whole bunch of crap, right? Because most of the PCs you buy, you know, you don't get a pure Windows 8 experience. You get loaded up with eBay and other random apps that come still built on right there when you launched it.
But
really?
Microsoft doesn't get that money. The OEMs do. Dell does.
Well, true. Yeah.
So I think your point is well taken, Tim. How do you monetize? How do you keep a company that's based on these incredibly high-margin products like Windows and Office, how do you get that transition that company to something that's so much more low-margin or no-margin? That's actually a very good point. And yet the cloud, from the point of view of the enterprise, is exactly what you need to be doing. And I think there is an opportunity to sell licenses to cloud services, SaaS, software as a service. Isn't that the future?
Absolutely. And you can make a lot of money on the back end. I mean, ultimately, there are going to need to be a lot of servers running this stuff, and there'll need to be a lot of integration, especially in corporations and that kind of thing. There's certainly a lot of money to be made on that side. But, you know, if your sole revenue stream is coming from enterprises, really, and, you know, if you're having to chase after advertising or something, some sort of minor incremental revenue stream from consumers, you know, that's nowhere near if you can get the, you know, the Windows NT side of things on the business side and have all of your enterprise customers and also have all the consumer customers that they had, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, maybe you just
have
to
see how they can sustain it.
Maybe you just have to accept that. Maybe that's what I often feel like. These companies are fighting against a normal business cycle. A technology, that business cycle is highly sped up. But, that you know, you got 10 years. And then, you know, somebody else's turn. Well, that shut everybody up. Would you like a snack? You know what? I sense low blood sugar. Robert's worried about his wine cellar friends. Tim is just enjoying the countryside. And Lake Tinkywink is calling to Mr. Clayton Morris, I think you should have some maple habanero pretzel pops. That's what I think.
Maple habanero?
Yeah. Wow. Well, wait, wrap your mind around that. It's got the sweetness of maple.
Maple habanero pretzel.
Maple's not in this. Maple's in it. And then it's got this tang, the high capsaicin of habanero.
Capsaicin.
Capsaicin.
Capsaicin. I know this from my Latina wife.
Yes.
Capsaicin.
Capsaicin.
That's what gives it all the spice.
You know that the spiciness of a chili pepper is rated by the Scoble number, isn't it? And then it's a pretzel. So wait a minute. No. So we have sweet maple, spicy habanero, the fabulous salty taste, and the crunch of a pretzel. I don't know what the pop does, but it's what my mind's doing right now. This is a Nature Box snack, and get ready. It's nutritionist approved. No HFCs. No, that's high fructose corn syrup, for those of you not in the know. No trans fats. No artificial flavors. No artificial colors. This is good stuff. See, nutritionist. This is Nature Box.
I have the capsaicin expert here.
Oh, look at that. A beautiful Natalie Morris. Like a fine cheese. You're getting
capsaicin habanero. What is capsaicin?
Oh, it's the like the powdered like substance that keeps peppers hot.
Hot. And then isn't the number the rating of the of how hot it is? The Scoville scale?
The Scoville units.
Yeah, see, I'm not making that up.
Right.
Yeah, Scoville units.
Maple
hi, Natalie.
It's Scoville, right?
With a yeah, v. It's a, with a V, but I'm going to call it sorry, Scoville when, units.
That's what I said.
Anytime there's spicy-related stuff, I needed to call my
bring in the habanero lady. Yeah, that's spicy right. Natalie Morris. Good to see you,
it's
Natalie.
It's kind of my superpowers that I can
and which of your many children was that?
That was Miles.
He's spicy. He ate a spicy taco tonight that was so spicy he had to have like two glasses of milk because it was so hot. So
that's good. Miles is
we're training him here. We're training
Miles well. Is a frat right. okay, a bye. Frat brother in the making, I can tell you right now. Is he wearing a toga?
Did you say that about my son?
Oh, believe what? Me, it's there's nothing you can do about it.
That was really upsetting.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry. No, he'll never join a frat. I promise.
I was just doing candlelight yoga with my son upstairs. Now I have to go do more to, like, de-bro him.
Yeah, no, he's not a bro. Namaste. I recognize
him? Right, go de-bro him.
The god in your... He's a go frat de-bro him. Boy. All right,
de-bro him. Bye.
Hey, bro. Go do your downward dog. Worship the sun. Warrior pose. Wouldn't you love to get a box of this every month? And, you know, if you're in a business and, you know, all good businesses now have snacks for their employees. Why send somebody down to Costco to buy crap or worse, have that vending machine when you could have delicious, healthy snacks? Your employees will love, your family will love Nature Box delivered to your door. 100+ different kinds of snacks, including... How about this? Sriracha roasted cashews. But they're not all spicy. They also have sweet praline pumpkin seeds. They have savory baked cheddar potato fries. Lone Star snack mix with barbecue flavored nut mix with multi-seed chips. I love it. Nature Box. Here's the deal. If you go to naturebox.com, pick your box. They do have vegan. They have gluten-free. They have a variety of different dietary needs. Soy-free. Or you can just get a wild assortment. Just, you know, be surprised. But you're going to get half off that first box if you use the offer code TWIT. Naturebox.com/TWIT. Get some delicious, guilt-free snacking delivered to your door every month. I love it. And so, you know, staff, do you love the Nature Box? Yes, they do.
Absolutely.
Staff loves the Nature Box. It makes for happy employees. Naturebox.com/TWIT. This is a sponsor we better keep because I don't want to have to pay for all those Nature Boxes you guys are eating. How many Nature Boxes a month do we go through? Oh, you don't want to know.
By the way, Leo, you should get a sponsorship from Hint, this stuff, Rob.
What is that stuff?
It's natural water. It's a number one drink at Google and Facebook right now.
Water. True. What a concept.
Natural water.
Yeah, yes, because if you are drinking Diet Coke all day long,
I got to say, the guy who figured out you could take water out of a tap and put it in a bottle and charge like a buck for it must be very happy right now.
Yeah, what don't they have in Philadelphia? When I lived in Philly or grew up there, they had the local city water commission did like a campaign where they took the tap water and they just put like Philly tap water on bottles. As they're selling it, but as a joke, but also to prove a point, like Philly tap water, I think New York City tap water is like some of the finest water in the world. So they were making the point, like, if you live in these cities, you don't need to be buying bottled water.
Yeah, because you have good tap water. Right. Actually, Manhattan has the best tap water in the world, they
is
say.
That right?
Very yeah. famous because it's getting it from the Schuylkill Reservoir or something. It's supposed to be very, very... I think Consumer Reports rated it the best water. That you throw out the Evian. That stuff's from France. That can't be good. And have your good old-fashioned American tap water right there.
Schuylkill's a beautiful place, too. It's just down the road from here, as a matter of fact. And they actually had snipers in the trees after 9/11 to protect the water and to protect the bald eagles, which also like to hang around there.
I don't think terrorists would go after bald eagles.
Not the eagles, but probably the water.
One of the interview questions I had when I was trying to get into Microsoft was, how do you sell ice to Eskimos? and that was a question to study how good are you at coming up with marketing ideas.
Wow. Could you sell Best cities for clean drinking water. Number one, Des Moines, Iowa. All right. I don't buy that. What is this? Forbes? What do they know? Bunch of capitalists. Austin, Texas is number two. Well, Chad, you lived in Austin. Is the water good in Austin?
Yeah, I actually like it.
Sioux Falls, South Dakota. All right, all right, all right, all right, all right.
Miami.
Florida water's terrible, isn't it? It's like, yeah, it tastes like sulfur. Awful.
Well, in fact, yeah, because of the most of Florida is below sea level, and global warming, man-made or not, I don't know where you stand on that one, but because of global warming, it is believed that, for instance, Miami Beach is going to just go away in the next couple of decades.
Miami's like, because of global warming, it's like going to be gone in like five years.
Already there's a multi-billion-dollar project in Miami Beach to hold back the waters because it's encroaching on the underground sewage system. That's why the water's so good in Miami.
This might just be clean fresh water sewage instead of actually tasting good. Which would make a lot of sense because they would have to purify it. Really.
Here's a story I thought was very interesting. It's not breaking news, but I thought it was very interesting. A study published in Science Express, they described four experiments. Based on their results, people are recalling information less because of Google. Why bother to remember when you could just Google it? In fact, what people are doing instead of trying to remember something is remembering how to find it. That makes sense. Here's how you test to see if you're one of these people. Imagine somebody asks you, and I'll ask you right now, everybody in the audience, how many countries have flags with only one color? Some of you, you old timers, will start thinking of flags. Most of you will start thinking of where you would search to find that. Yes?
Wow.
Yeah. How do I Google that? Right? Welcome to the 21st century. This concept, by the way, is not new to the computer age. It's called transactive memory. That's the sum of information held by a group. Think of it as a group of experts working as a team where each person has their own area of expertise. But now, of course, we don't need the team. What are you looking at? What is that? Oh, he's looking at... And you Googled it.
I did a search for red flags.
Yeah, there you go.
And then you can do one for green flags and blue flags. And
there you
white
go.
Flags.
Is it evolutionary, though? I'm curious. You know, there are certain things that we needed to remember more of 300 years ago. Are these things now less important to us that we don't need to worry about them because the tools have come along? So that part of our brain has shut down. I don't remember
not
phone
shut
numbers
down.
Anymore.
It's just replaced with more personal stuff that you can't Google.
Okay, so how about maybe that? More important things or maybe other nuggets of information that I, you know, I can't remember the last time I paid attention to a phone number. The only phone number I think I remember is my wife's phone number and my childhood phone number growing up in my parents' house.
Remember my home phone number as a kid. I vividly remember that. But I haven't had to memorize a number since because my phone does it. And in fact, when you exchange numbers these days, what's the easiest way to do it? I don't know what my number is. Let me just call you.
Right.
And now it's in your phone. Right?
Right. That's the easiest way. Just call me or text me your number or something
like
that.
Isn't that better? Because we're remembering names, not numbers. We don't need to remember numbers.
It's way better. When I was a software developer for a long time, and when I first started to learn software development in the 90s, it was a lot of memorization of APIs and calls and things like that. But as the tools got better and as the research abilities got better, you know, you didn't have to learn APIs anymore because the tools would kind of look up everything for you. And at that point, it just became kind of a game of remembering what each module could do, what each language could do roughly, and knowing where to look to find it, basically. But you didn't have to remember anything anymore. And suddenly you could go out and learn a new programming language in a couple of days because you only needed to get the syntax down. You didn't have to memorize every little bit. And ultimately, that made me a much more powerful programmer. And I think that that's kind of the general approach that we're being able to take to our day-to-day lives now with the smartphones and being able to look up things dynamically and get directions to places. You know, you don't have to remember even how to get anywhere anymore, which is, I think, is a good thing.
I do, too.
But I worry about the vapidness, though, with because the just the level of information we have access to now, and we know, I mean, and Tim, I'm sure you can speak to this as a writer and the reaction that you would get from longer posts on Engadget. And we see this with BuzzFeed and the smaller and smaller snippets of information. And, you know, people are only looking at screens for a few seconds before they move on to the next thing. They're not really sitting there reading 40 minute articles or, you know, and digesting 10,000 words and like we used to. And so I know there was a period, I felt like there was like a 2-year period that where I just don't think I remembered a damn thing. Where I used to sit inside of Barnes & Noble for hours and just read like Foreign Policy magazine and Time magazine and just go through these large articles. And I'd have – then when I would go on the air, I would be able to have like deep contextual analysis.
Yeah.
And I would be able to pull from this as a history major and be able to say, well, you know, back in 1960, this happened. Now – there was like a 2-year period a few years ago where I felt – dumb as a rock. I just felt like I wasn't remembering anything, and I couldn't contextualize large pieces of information. I couldn't contextualize news stories in a way that I used to be able to. And I really blame that on just like consuming small snippets of information and not sitting for long periods
factoids
of time.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So
but as broadcasters, we can't, you know, you can't sit here and Google an answer as you're when you're sitting there on the set.
Right.
So it's actually we may be the last holdouts so people actually have to know anything. Or at least remember anything.
Speaking of phone numbers, Leo, have you seen this app called Human yet?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my wife was telling me about this. Yeah, I haven't played with it yet.
She
got annoyed by it, though. She got annoyed by it because there's so many notifications. What is it? It's like a contacts manager for everything, right?
Yeah.
It's not. It's a fitness. It's a fitness tracker.
No, it's a replacement for your phone and your contacts.
Oh.
So here is
who you know, how you know them. So people that you met at a given meeting, or you can run queries in there to say, who
is this? Why do I know them?
Who did I meet at this meeting? And I should recuse myself and say that I actually done some advising with humans. So I should make that clear.
No, well, don't recuse yourself. We now understand that you have some relationship with them, but tell us more. I think this is interesting.
So the idea is basically to bring some of this intelligence in, you know, in a modern system to your contact book. And so instead of just saying, you know, so-and-so's last name begins with A, so therefore he's at the top, say instead, this is the person that I call a lot, so therefore they're going to be at the top. Or I'm traveling to San Francisco. Who do I know who lives in San Francisco? And then post a message out and say, hey, I'm in San Francisco. Or I need to get an introduction to somebody at Google because I'm looking to get a job there. Who do I know who works at Google? Or who do I know who knows somebody who works at Google? And basically trying to bring that sort of smart and that sort of real world context and relationships to an app effectively.
It also keeps your contact list up to date because let's say I have an old business card from Tim Stevens that I scanned 5 years ago and it's in my Google contacts and he got a new job and a new phone and all the, and a new email address. And I don't know any of that. He can validate his account and say, oh, if anybody has these things in their contacts, replace them with the new thing and send it out. And then everybody's contact list gets up to date. Really nice.
So it's Plaxo?
It's similar to Plaxo, but it's for mobile phone. It's much nicer than Plaxo, and it's contextual. So if we're together, it starts telling us information about each other, which is nice. And it also, if I add you, let's say I meet you at a party or something, and I ask, hey, can I enter your email address into my contact list? It'll even keep track of what party we met at. So, 4 years later when
But you have to enter that in.
No, it knows where we are. It's mobile first.
So it's location
and because
aware.
Of that, it can actually say, if you've got a meeting coming up, it'll say, you've got a meeting with Betty, who you met at this party, and show you Betty's picture. So when you walk into that meeting, you'll now know what Betty looks like. Because I'm terrible with names, which may tie back to this other issue that we're talking about, not being able to remember anything anymore. But the app will basically prompt you about the people that you're about to see and where you met them and kind of give you some contextual clues to help you remember who those people were, which
this
is also
great. It's iPhone only.
For now, there's an Android version coming very soon.
Within days.
Oh, good.
I don't know about that.
It's hard to find because human.
I just interviewed the CEO last week. He said
Tim,
within days.
All right.
Let's say a couple weeks.
Okay. That could be 14 days.
Within days.
Hard to find because human is kind of a generic term.
It's H-U-M-I-N.
H-U-M.
I-N. Oh, no wonder I couldn't find it.
Like capsaicin.
I am.
Like capsaicin. All right. Let's take a break and see. We got a great panel here. We got a few more stories. We're going to wrap it up. Mr. Tim Stevens here from CNET. Mr., it's good to have you.
Thank you.
Clayton Morris from Tinky Wink.
The night has descended on the lake.
This is really straight out of a little cabin in the woods. I swear to God. I'm just waiting for a trap door to open down the hall. And Robert Scoble from space. And we had a great week on Twit. Do we have also a week ahead? No. Okay. So we don't know what next week's going to look like, but if I look back, last week was a killer watch.
Previously on Twit.
Something's wrong with this picture.
Look, I finally found a good use for an iPad.
This week in enterprise tech.
So I'm here at Black Hat 2014, and we're talking to Fluke Networks and what they're doing to shut down drones and Google Glass in your enterprise.
Marketing mavericks.
Facebook now feels like they actually have to tell us when something is satire.
Not to tell us, Tanya, it's to tell only the morons.
Security now.
We now know what ISP pushed the wrong button that caused a major problem throughout the entire internet.
All about Android.
Ignore No More is developed by a frustrated mom who created this app that gives her the power to remotely lock and disable her kid's phone. I hope to never have to use an app like this. I don't ever want to use an app like this.
Twit. Some assembly required.
My Emmy just appeared. I'm just going to do the rest of the show this way.
Is that the travel size Emmy? Because it doesn't look like it's in skin.
He just swung that out. I didn't even see it coming. It was like Braveheart.
And the week ahead actually is going to be pretty big. I think we're going to, well, next week we won't. Next week's the last week of August. The following week, we're going to do live coverage. I assume Motorola is going to do this of the Moto X or whatever announcement September 4th and then Apple September 9th. What is Motorola going to announce on September 4th? We talked a lot about Apple. What about Motorola?
Watch 360.
The 360.
Mm-hmm.
A new Moto X. I see. I thought the Moto X was like the best Android phone of the year. You're all iPhone users. I can't talk to you.
I have a Note 3.
No, I have. Oh, okay. I like the Moto X. That was one of my favorite Android phones. This
I
year,
loved
the
it.
Nexus.
And Nexus, I feel like, by the way, Motorola is still owned by Google, right? It hasn't yet become Lenovo. So this is the last kind of Google Motorola phone. Anyway, yeah, but, I'm excited. So many... You don't have to be. It's okay. It's just me. I understand.
What are you most excited about? The watch?
Well, I want the watch phone combo. See, I like the Moto X because it was a pretty pure Google experience, and yet it had those nice, you could talk to it. It would talk back to you. It would know when you're awake, know when you're asleep. It was like a little buddy.
It was cool. I did like that feature. The camera was so terrible.
But the camera was crappy, and it was only 720p, 4.7 inches. And I suspect that what we're going to see is they're going to fix the hardware with a good camera. And maybe a 5-inch screen that's 1080p.
But is it going to be ahead of the curve? I think that's the question. I mean, I think the Moto X was a good phone, but it just felt like it was maybe 6 months too late.
Maybe it's too late. Yeah,
it was a phone that I think a lot of people loved because of the personalization too, which is certainly nice. And I hope that they maintain that. But
they are going to maintain. Supposedly, they're going to maintain that. The leaks show wooden backs and things like that.
Good to hear.
And then there are a lot of people who are upset, and I'm going to ruin your life. Because I was excited. Apparently, LG is also going to do a round Android Wear watch. And of all the watches so far, until Apple does its watch, I think the Android Wear is the one. But they're ugly and clunky and square. Motorola's got this round 360. But I'm going to ruin this for you now. And somebody told me this, and it's really pissing me off. There's this black bar at the bottom. And now, having seen it, you can't unsee it, and it's in all the pictures.
Yeah.
Damn it.
So weird.
Gosh darn it.
It seems like a rush.
It's hard. There's some stuff in there.
It's hard to get a screen that's circular entire industry has been making square screens.
Yeah. LG has announced they will also do a round screen. John Gruber called it a flat tire. Damn you, Gruber!
Just a rush to get these things out, you know?
Yeah.
And we saw that.
It's interesting because they had the Aura smartphone, which had a round display, and I was just looking at pictures of that, and there's nothing like that on the Aura. And I always figured that the displays were very similar between the Aura and the Moto 360, but there's no little black flat tire on the Aura anyway.
I love this. Google has admitted that its self-driving cars are programmed to exceed the speed limits by 10 miles an hour,
which is how we all drive.
Might as well.
I mean, what person other than my wife drives 10 miles under the speed limit?
If you were in a self-driving car and it were going the speed limit, you'd go, hurry up! Come on!
Or or she'd yell at me, slow down, and be like, Google's driving.
It's not my fault, lady.
Leave me alone.
For the record, Volvo self-driving cars can also break the speed limit by about the same, they said.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. CHP, California Highway Patrol, mine.
Which isn't there, I had talked to a highway patrolman a few years ago on a story, and I thought the plus or minus was like the error rate. Maybe it's much improved now, but to hold up in a court of law was like 7 miles per hour, plus or minus.
I think it's also, let's not underestimate the embarrassment factor of hauling someone into court for going 4 miles over the speed limit.
Right. You know you're trying to hit quota if you're doing that.
Yeah. I think it's really more that. I saw bridesmaids that they look at the guy, he's going to work, it's okay, and then whoa, that guy's going really way too fast. It's, you know, it's a judgment call. Does anybody work for the highway patrol here? No. I'm just curious. I was sitting on a Golden Gate Transit bus going to work. They were training a driver, and I figured these guys know because they drive every day. He said you can go 6 miles over the speed limit, you'll never get a ticket. 10, I don't seven, know.
And I haven't had a ticket since 1997, I think. Something like that.
And your policy is 7 miles over the speed limit?
7 miles an hour over, yeah.
Do you set the cruise control, or you just kind of have
In Virginia, 20 over is a misdemeanor, and I won't tell you how I know this.
Burke, you say 10. How do you know 10? Burke says 10 miles over the speed limit with this certitude that makes me feel like you know a CHP officer.
And always, like, slower than 5 miles an hour than the faster cars. If
there's cars going 5 miles an hour faster than you, you're never going to get dinged, because unless the trooper can't keep up with those faster cars, then he'll just get you. You're the fish in the back of the pack that the shark eats. You don't want to be that person. 72 is how fast he goes.
You can get a ticket for going too slow in the left lane.
That's right. My daughter got a ticket. I shouldn't tell anybody this, but I'm gonna. My daughter got a ticket because she didn't go when the light turned green because she was texting. So she got a ticket for texting and for obstructing traffic.
Yep.
Ooh. Ouch.
Ouch.
That hurts.
That's going to be
a
problem.
Here's a question. Will the Google self-driving car have a camera looking backwards to look for flashing blue and red lights for getting pulled over? And if so, will it hand the license and registration over automatically, or will you have to do that yourself?
It actually does look behind you, and it does look for lights that are flashing in a certain pattern.
Does it?
There you go.
Yeah.
Will it pull over?
That depends on the programming.
Shouldn't the police just have, like, a tractor beam or something for these cars? And just, they flip a switch and the car goes, oh, I give up. You got me. They should. They should just, like...
follow you like they followed O.J. Simpson until you stop.
Yeah.
And then they'll go, hey.
somebody who sounds like they know in the chat room says there's a 4 to 5 mile an hour leeway due to differences in speedometer calibration. However, 6 to 10 is entirely up to the officer and dependent upon road conditions, etc. That sounds right. Yeah. That sounds right. Our show today, speaking of all of this, brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Need a lawyer? No, they don't. They're not a law firm, actually. They give you self-help services at your specific direction. You wouldn't go to them to get out of a speeding ticket. However, do you have a will? You know, this is a national Make-A-Will month, the month of August. And I'll tell you, if you've got property, if you've got kids, you don't want the courts to say what happens. So don't procrastinate. People think maybe I can't afford to do a will. It's too expensive. It's going to take too much time. It doesn't. It takes about 20 minutes at LegalZoom.com. Costs very little. What is the cost for a will? I think it starts at $69. We're going to get you $10 off of that if you use our offer code TWIT. I mean, this is great. They also have things like the living wills, medical directives. They have a health care power of attorney, but they also have a pet protection agreement. You know, all of this stuff, you ought to do this. It's $39 to make sure that Fido goes to a good home. Right, Ozzy? Here comes my dog. He says, have you done your pet protection agreement? He wants to know. LegalZoom.com. It's an easy thing to do. You'll actually enjoy it. because it walks you through it. It was developed by some of the best legal minds in the country. They make it painless for you to get the help you need. And by the way, if you do want an attorney, they have pre-negotiated flat rate attorneys in almost every state that you can use in their legal plan. So this is it's just it's a no-brainer. This is what you need. Protect your family. Protect your future at LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TWIT to save on your legal needs and get access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom. And here's the legal disclaimer. LegalZoom was developed by top attorneys to provide self-help services at your specific direction, but they're not a law firm. Legal help is furnished through vetted independent attorneys. We thank LegalZoom so much for their support. And don't forget to use that offer code TWIT and you save $10. Do you have a will, Clayton? Of course you do.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, they just turned the lights out at Tinky Wink.
It just got dark real fast here.
Really fast.
Yeah. Yeah, with all the bears around here, I better have a will. Gotta provide.
Hey, Boo-Boo, I see a broadcaster with a giant yeti. It's a picnic broadcaster. Let's see. YouTube subscription service Music Key. Somebody might know more about this than I. What I don't understand. I do understand that most kids these days, there's no music on MTV. They're watching Big Brother if they're watching MTV. But if they want to watch music or listen to music, I see my son do this. They'll queue up YouTube videos. And that's right. How you get music. If you're under 25, that's where music comes from is YouTube.
Right, but the big problem is you can't take that offline, of course, yet, and that's part of the solution that's going to be offered by this Music Key service, supposedly, at least, is that you'll be able to queue up those things and take them offline with you, including the supposedly concert footage and things like that, too, which will be interesting. And there's been a lot of discussions and leaks about YouTube's offline video service for a long time now, and I've been pretty eager to see if YouTube could offer that. So I'm curious to see if that'll get rolled into this as well, or if it'll just be YouTube offline for music-based stuff. But I think it'd be great if you could, you know, if you've got a flight coming up, if you could go to make a big playlist of, you know, subscriptions on YouTube and funny videos and download them all and take it on the plane with you. I think that'd be great. And $10 a month, if you could pay that and have, you know, ad-free videos forever on YouTube, that'd be pretty great too. But right now, at least the leak is just pointing to music service, offlineable YouTube video stuff, and it'll also tie into the Play Music service too.
So you'll get both for $10 a month. Android Police had this exclusive earlier this week. I do like it. One of the features is no ads, so that's the big drawback. If you like made a playlist of YouTube videos of songs you like, you got to have a, you know, there's going to be an ad in between them. So you can, if you pay $10, it will eliminate the ads offline. I think that's less desirable just because those are big files, right? And then background audio. So it will continue to play on your Android device after you exit out of it, which I don't think YouTube does right now, right?
No. Well, if you have one of the Galaxy devices, you can do the picture-in-picture stuff, and some of the other Android devices have customizations like that. But I'm curious if this is built into the Android YouTube app or if they'll have a new app. Because right now, you know, you can search for artists and that kind of thing, but you can't browse down through an artist's discography like you can through Spotify, for example. So I would think they'd need to do some pretty significant enhancements to the YouTube app to make it work like this, which kind of feels like, you know, shoving a square peg in a round hole. So I'm curious to see how they handle that, how they make the YouTube app better for music playback than it is now, or if they really rely on the Play Music services and then kind of just have ties out to video when needed.
This looks like it's the YouTube app. It's got the YouTube logo on it. This is the Android Police screenshots. Audio only mode, turn off your screen or listen in the background while using other apps, add free music and offline playback. You know, if it comes with Google Play Music, that makes Google Play Music all the more enticing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I use for my music because I love it because you've got 20 million albums. It's got all of my albums. So I can listen, you know, it'll store all my stuff from my computer. I'm curious. So, Robert, what do you use for music? What do you do for music?
Spotify.
Spotify. Because you like the social stuff.
No. It has every music my people can come up with.
Don't they all have the same, roughly the same?
Yeah.
I know Led Zeppelin's only on iTunes. There are a few bands that you can't, but mostly.
Probably.
Yeah.
I got into Spotify, and I love it. It's
I love
I tried the Beats. I tried the Google one, and It's just I like the UI better, and I like the quickness of it. The search is really awesome.
I love Spotify, and I love the ability to make a playlist, share the playlist, and know that every song in that playlist everybody will have.
Yeah.
What do you use, Tim?
I use Spotify as well. I still use Play Music for my offline collection, you know, my old CDs that I've ripped and that kind of thing. I almost left Spotify for Beats just because it was getting difficult to manage playlists, especially if you wanted to take an entire artist discography offline. I didn't think they were doing that very well, but they just recently changed with the My Music system where you can now save an artist and then tag albums that you want and mark those for offline playback, which is much, much easier than it used to be. So since they made that change, I'm pretty happy with that. I also like the inclusion of desktop apps and the ability to play right from the web too, which means I can play from pretty much anywhere.
How about Clayton? What do you use?
You know, I'm still sort of old school. I love the idea of owning my own albums. I had a huge wall of CDs growing up, and I used to sit there for hours in my room and listen to Pink Floyd and REM and all these other albums. And so and I would digest that stuff. So the idea of sort of curating my own stuff has been great. But as I've gotten older, I mean, I'll launch iTunes and just play my own albums and playlists that I've created. But as I've gotten older, I realized like my playlists are like 20 songs deep now. And really, I just want someone else to do the thinking for me, that when I'm going to listen to music, I don't want to have to think about all, you know, the extra layers of building playlists. So I love Songza. I'm a huge fan of Songza.
Google just bought them.
Just sort of,
Oh,
yeah, So you pick, you know, you're able to pick the mood that you're in. So if you're having, you know, we're out on the patio cooking on the barbecue or something like that, or having a cookout, just afternoon, hit those songs and it'll, you know, I love like the Ron Burgundy Bachelor Pad playlist that the Songza has curated.
They have one? Oh, I want that.
Oh, yeah. There's so many great, and you know what? They actually work with certain artists like David Byrne and others to sort of well, curate their own lists.
That was the promise of
Songza.
Beats, too. Remember Jimmy Iovine saying, you know, human curation, there's nothing that could replace it. Beats has some really interesting features. You create a sentence that describes what you're in the mood for.
Yeah, so after you guys were talking about that, I think on MacBreak last week, I hadn't played with Beats, and I downloaded it. And I really love that idea. Like, sitting by the, you know, so you type a sentence, right? Like, sitting by the beach having coffee,
right?
And it'll create a playlist given that idea, and I love that idea.
Here's a sentence. This is from the iTunes screenshot. I'm at a party and feel like barbecuing with my best friend forever, my BFF, to dance pop. And then there's a play button, and you'll get that. And I think that's really intriguing. And that's the same thing as Songza, kind of.
Right.
This has not. I don't think Beats has received a lot of traction. Maybe they're doing better now than before the Apple acquisition. But
what's the last album you all bought?
I could tell you because I just bought albums last night. Not a physical CD or you know what I've been buying lately is high resolution tracks, high def tracks. Because my Pono player will be here in 2 months. What are you laughing at? Neil Young's good. So I'm starting to be interested in digital master tracks. You know, 192 kilobit, 24-bit samples, that kind of thing. Kilohertz, 24-bit samples. So the last, I just bought about 8 Joni Mitchell albums. Okay. I got to go take some.
I think the last one I bought was that new Michael Jackson album.
Thriller?
The unreleased one that just came out that's was tearing up the charts a few months ago.
So a lot of the Michael Jackson stuff is HD tracks. There's a number of places. Pono's going to have its own music store, but I've been buying on HD tracks. And apparently these music companies are releasing uncompressed FLAC versions recorded at 96 kilohertz, 24 bits, or 128 kilobits or whatever, 192 kilobits, 24 kilohertz, 24 bits. I probably can't hear the difference because I'm an old man, but I like knowing the bits are there even if I can't hear them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I do.
It's like photo resolution.
Yeah, it's like photo resolution. Somehow you feel like there's going to be something there. And I bought I bought Crosby, Stills, and Nash because I'm listening to Graham Nash's new book. And I bought Kind of Blue, Miles Davis.
Oh, one of the great jazz albums of all time.
Well, there's a 96-24 version of it from the master tapes. See?
Yeah, now you're speaking my language.
But you can't play it back in iTunes. You have to, there's an app for the Mac called Vox that you can play it back in, or you can get your Pono player, put it on there, then listen to it on $10 earbuds, and you're golden.
Right.
All right. We've wasted enough of your time. It's Clayton is now actually in the Milky Way, which is pretty cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can see the Andromeda Galaxy up there.
Yeah. Wow. Look at that. You look like Carl Sagan. Except he didn't have such a big mic. Clayton, go to Read Quick app if you want to know more about Clayton's app for iOS. It's for the iPad and the iPhone. It'll help you read faster and enjoy your reading more. And of course, you can catch him on Fox and Friends. What else? What else? Are you still doing the podcasts?
Yeah, we still got our nerd podcast, the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. I've been doing it now. It's hard to believe we're entering our seventh year of doing that podcast. And yeah, we just talk. We just ran through. We both watched the new CW show, The Flash, the pilot of The Flash. So we dissected that. We talked about Guardians of the Galaxy. And we're talking about Gotham and some of the other nerd-related shows coming out. So Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe is just a labor of love that me and my best friend Mike have been doing for nearly 7 years now.
Wow,
so.
That's great. GrizzlyBearCafe.com for that. Tim Stevens, what do you want to plug? Come on, plug something, anything.
Well, I just did I just finally got challenged to the ALS Ice Bucket thing, which I threw a tomahawk at a thing, which is kind of cool. So check that out.
Wait a minute. Wait, you threw a tomahawk instead of an ice bucket?
Yeah. I made this big contraption with an ice bucket over my head held by a string that I cut with a tomahawk. And it's kind of hard to explain, but check it out. That's anyway. Awesome. But from a more professional standpoint, I've got, I'm working on a series of videos on the Google Lunar X Prize this summer, which is really exciting. Challenge. Cool. A series of teams are working to get to the moon. They're basically racing. Competition ends next year. This summer, a lot of those teams are testing their systems. So they're, firing rockets and making sure that the rovers rove and things like that. So I've been visiting a lot of the teams this summer. Really good series on CNET. Should be a new entry later this week. Went to Bremen, Germany to see a lunar camera system being tested in a simulated lunar environment. So look for that later this week.
You have a good job, Tim Stevens.
It's pretty good.
Here he is with the ice bucket challenge, the tomahawk at the ready.
All right. Thanks to Ashley Esqueda and also to Mark Hearn, I've been challenged to the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
I got to say one thing. Don't get on that ladder. Thing is going to collapse.
I do stand underneath the ladder, though.
That is it. I see these ladders. They advertise them at county fairs. Just doesn't look safe. Okay, I'm just saying. All right, let's see it.
Up this contraption,
first you're going to throw a tomahawk.
So. A lot of string to hopefully, if I cut the string with my axe, dump a bucket of water on my head. We'll
find out. You just want to get in the blooper rail for best fails. Oh, best this is fails. Oh, look at this. Not a whoa. Oh, it was a slow burn.
Slow. It took a while. Too much friction on the rope, I think it was. But it worked.
All right.
Nice job. That's great. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you for
very Ed Ames of you. Mm. I like it. Thank you also, Robert Scoble. I'm serious. Come up here. Set my Facebook up.
I will come up there soon. We'll all talk right. Offline.
Do it while I'm here, if you would.
In my ice bucket challenge, co-founder of Activision threw ice on my head, and they made it colder than the ice that Tim used.
Wait a minute. How did he make it colder?
They put salt in it, and they put it in the blast furnace.
They actually did that?
Restaurant. Yeah. They're my best friend Andy is was one of the 12 guys who built the iPhone. Also was involved in there.
Never allow a scientist to set up your ice bucket challenge.
I think they're colluding with the people in the chat room who don't want to hear more about me.
No, we love you, Robert. We do. And look, they're putting salt in there. How many degrees colder does that make that?
I don't know, but it was saltier.
Saltier. Did it feel colder?
It was colder. It was cold. Plus, I had 3 buckets of ice thrown on my head.
Wow.
But
are they going to surprise you?
No. We planned it out. I was wearing my Google Glass too, and the Google Glass, I don't know that it survived.
Oh my God, you killed your glass.
I killed my glass.
Your $1,500 Google.
Let's be honest. Somebody had to do it.
Somebody had to do it.
Somebody
your
had to
dopey
do it.
Google accessory, dead.
I figured since you all saw my shower picture wearing glass that you had to see it, that this was the revenge for that.
And where are you doing this? This looks like somewhere maybe. Entrepreneurs
this
gather.
This is right behind the Ritz at Mullins Restaurant. And it was fun.
Yeah.
The nerds in Half Moon Bay, man. Watch out for them.
Okay, stop talking. Just take the ice, will you, please? God, it's going on and on and on.
Yeah.
Who did you challenge?
Arrington. Who else did I challenge? I challenged a few people.
Yeah. All right, here he is.
Boys!
Dunk the sucker.
Scott Jordan, who makes my clothes.
I relish every second.
You're going to put down my back, aren't you?
I'm going to just...
It is cold. I'll vouch for that. It is really colder than you think. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for being here. Thank you and the studio audience. Wonderful to have you. The VM World Conference is coming up. We have a few engineers here for that and people from all around the world, including two who just met at their high school reunion. And that's kind of sweet. What a date. Make sure you go to teespring.com/twit. Last chance, two more days to buy the Brick House third anniversary T-shirt. This shirt will never again be made. $20. It benefits Twit, and we appreciate the support. How many have we sold so far? 870. That's great. We don't get all of the $20. Some of it goes to Chinese slaves. Twit. No, I think these are all made in America, as a matter of fact.
American slaves.
American slaves. Teespring.com/Twit. You can watch Twit 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. 2200 UTC every Sunday afternoon. That's when we do it live. We love having you live, but of course, if you can't make it, on-demand audio and video are always available at twit.tv and wherever you get your podcasts. Or somebody said you should mention all the podcast apps. I can't. There's many of them. We do like Stitcher, but iTunes, of course, the Xbox Music Store, the podcast app, Instacast, Downcast. There's so many of them. And we have quite a few third-party Twit apps even. In fact, that's a good way to get it. And, of course, if you want to be in studio, email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put out a chair for you. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit
this is in the can.